You're listening to the General Geekery Podcast.
All right, welcome everyone to General Geekery, episode 14, the West Wing episode. This is the one that I mentioned on the last episode that at some point I was going to hijack an episode of the podcast and get a bunch of wing nuts on so we could talk all about the West Wing. And I ended up doing exactly that this week, and I asked for volunteers, and I got a whole bunch of them. So on with me right now, we've got Natalie.
Hi, everybody.
And David.
How's it going?
Man, at some point, Frank's going to show up. But he had something come up, but he said he'd be late. So, welcome to General Geekery. Thanks for making the appearance here. Thanks for stepping up within 10 minutes of me even putting out a call for volunteers. That was hilarious. It's nice to finally be able to do this episode, but it's really nice to get not just fans, but enthusiastic wing nuts, because that is exactly what we are.
Absolutely. Unquestionable.
Yes. 100%.
My family, from my father, my mother, there's six of us. My sister and myself, and I think even my oldest brother, all of us have been nuts about the show for, you know, 15, 17 years now, basically. I didn't realize just how many people like me there were until we found that initial Wit and Wisdom group that was shut down. I've been a fan of the West Wing as long as I can remember it existing. And, my sister and I quote it, you know, daily.
I did not watch it in its initial run, but that's simply because at the time, I think about the only thing that I was really watching on TV was, I think it was Star Trek Enterprise, honestly, which, by the way, I really liked the show, but not much rewatch quality there. But I also didn't watch it because Sports Night, I didn't even start watching that until it was already off TV and Comedy Central was running it every day at noon. It would be on, and I started watching it one day and I'm like, wow, this is excellent television. And then later on, I found out about the West Wing, and I didn't watch it initially, but as soon as I got through my first, cause I've started watching it on Netflix back before they even had the streaming service, when you'd have to get the discs. And I remember I got the first couple discs because I had it in my plan to get the two discs at a time. And then I'd get the discs, I'd watch the episodes, because there were only, I think, four episodes on each disc, and I'd send them back. And then a day or two later, I'd get the next discs. But I basically watch one, mail it back the next day, so that night I could watch a second one, and then Netflix would just keep sending them to me. But at some point, that wasn't enough. So I went and I chalked up the extra money to upgrade the account so I could get three or four discs at a time. because it just, it wasn't it. Like I'd reached the end of the disc and I'm like, well, that's what, you know, what happened. So, now it just streams and it's on Netflix and now I can just watch as many or as few as I want to. But yeah, I mean, I was on, you know, Facebook, I think, earlier this year, and somebody said something about the West Wing, and I saw somebody had shared, I went on there looking for, West Wing, podcasts, which is when I found out about, like, winging it, and somebody that was listening to that, it came up in the search results, I think. It was for some West Wing group, and I joined that. And then somebody in that group linked to the Wit and Wisdom of the West Wing Facebook group. And, yeah, then all of a sudden I was steeped in this world of these people that were crazy about the show, constantly rewatched the show, could quote the show, and I'm like, where's this group been all my life?
Exactly. I can't.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Natalie, did you watch it initially, or were you late to
so
the party?
No, I was aware of the show during its initial run, but I was in college at the time and doing a million other things, so I did not watch it then. I actually watched it for the first time about 6 years ago. And at that point, it was streaming on Netflix, which I cannot imagine how the people who watched the first run managed, because if I hadn't been able to keep going next episode, next episode, next episode, I would have, like, lost it.
can you imagine watching What Kind of Day Has It Been?
No!
And then having to wait until the end of September to
so
watch
season 2.
That's
a funny
two.
Story because I was watching the first season and I got to the episode before that and I was like, oh, I can watch one more episode tonight. No big deal. So I watched What Kind of Day Has It Been and I'm like, well, I can't stop here. So what if I have to work tomorrow morning? So I put on the next episode and not knowing it's a two-parter. I was up till like 4 in the morning that night. I get to work the next day, like barely functioning. And everyone's like, I had a rough night.
Which episode did you make it through before you finally just said, that's it? I can't physically.
I made it through the midterms.
Oh, wow.
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 With the psychics at Caltech.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm notorious for that. I'm notorious for that. I'm that way with The West Wing. I'm that way with Doctor Who. But
yes,
I'm like Archer. Like you name it. Like if I like the show, especially when I know the show so well, and I know what's coming in that episode, and I just want to see it again. I'm the exact same way. So don't be disheartened by that.
yep.
Well, and for me, when I'm not streaming West Wing, I'm streaming NCIS, and it's the same thing. It'll be nighttime, but I'm like, nope, I gotta watch one more. And then, see, the thing is with the West Wing, because it wasn't on Netflix, and then all of a sudden last month I realized, oh my god, it's on Netflix. Oh boy, here goes. and then I'm like, oh yeah, 13 seasons. I started watching it two weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. I'm partway through season 11 now, and that's good in god. Between watching the Stray episode of Madam Secretary, the Survivors, or West Wing. So, I've stopped watching movies entirely on Netflix because what's a movie?
Oh yeah, the movies don't matter anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
No. I've found that as much as I love movies, I want to stay immersed in things for as long as humanly possible.
Yep.
I just can't, like, so I will just watch TV series, like, exclusively for as long as I can remember, or as long as I can go. And for some reason, I just can't bring myself to watch movies most of the time.
No, neither can I. I'll start a movie. And, really, the only way I can watch a movie all the way through beginning to end is if somebody else is watching with me. Because if somebody else isn't watching with me, nope, I'm getting part way into it. I'm like, nope, I'm going to watch a TV show now. So here's the most basic question. What is your very favorite episode from all seven seasons?
Only one?
No, your very favorite. Like that one that if somebody told you till the end of time, you could only have this one episode forever, that you'd be okay with just that episode.
Oh, that's easy.
All right, top three. All right, we'll just go with that. Because let's face it, I do have one very favorite, but the second place is so close on its heels that it's tough.
I have to go, if I may. I have to go with the top for me is The Two Cathedrals. That is unquestionably, at least for me, the best hour of television in history. And I know that that's like the easy mark, because if you ever like, if BuzzFeed ever does a list, or if, you know, the AV Club ever does a list, they all always put Two Cathedrals at the top.
Yeah. You know what, though? You make it sound like a cliche, but, well, cliches are
quality
there for
matters.
A reason.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, but that episode is, it's got everything, and there is no better scene to ever come across a television screen than Jed in the National Cathedral.
Well, let's put it this way. Before that episode, I had never in my life heard the word feckless, and now, oh boy, I love that word.
Oh yeah, it's a yes. Great word. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's so much passion in that scene, and I've got another story, a Sorkin story about that scene.
You know what? I don't know how. I mean, okay, well, for one, I'm not quite no. Martin Sheen never won an Emmy for the show.
I know.
But even Rob Lowe said in one of his books, he deserved it, but he said he just happened to have the misfortune that every time he was nominated, the runner-up behind him was James Gandolfini for The Sopranos. And he's convinced that Tony Soprano is the one and only reason why Martin Sheen never got the Emmy nod. And, you know, I think that might be the one case that, all right, it makes sense. I mean, I do wish for a season, maybe they had given him the nod. But you know what? That scene in Two Cathedrals, that alone should have garnered an Emmy.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
100%.
That scene is just, it's so powerful. I mean, it's not just the indictment of the Almighty, or the passion behind it. It's simply the bravery that Sorkin put into writing that. It's like, that isn't something you see on TV very often.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, it is cliche to cite Two Cathedrals as the best of The West Wing, but I mean, there's a reason for it. You can't, it for pure drama and pure emotion, it's tough to beat it. I mean, yeah. there's a bunch of episodes that, you know, that always, you know, it always, it's gut wrenching, but it's, there isn't one anymore. That's the most powerful the West Wing gets. I mean, it hits a lot of high notes, but that's the peak of it right there.
Absolutely. So I'm going to go with, I mean, I'm purposefully not going to say two cathedrals because we've already discussed that. But when I think about the episode that if I'm going to just watch a random episode, it's always In the Shadow of Two Gunmen. I think that as far as season premieres go, it's the strongest one. I think that just the emotions that are in it, that, and I love getting, that's one of the first times we really get any backstory on any of the characterizations.
Yeah,
that's true.
And I love watching how everybody meets each other and how they initially interact with each other and what their history is. And I think that that helps really round out the characters that we've already gotten to know so efficiently and so well, and yet doesn't break who they are either.
That's an excellent way to put it. And I think you're absolutely right.
You know what? When Leo says, "Come to Nashua," because
that's sons do. Yeah,
yeah.
For
I mean,
friends of their fathers.
You know, it's true. It's like you know, he doesn't. You know, he tells him to go because, I mean, Leo knows him well enough to know that he's going to see the same thing that Leo sees, but. Beyond that, it's also because then you see Josh go to Gage Whitney, and you know he hesitates when he talks about the Hoynes campaign, and Sam says, well, what are you going to Nashua for? I mean, you know, and then he tells him, and then he's like, do you want me to call you if I see the real thing? And then he says, you won't need to because you got a bad poker face. And then he shows up at the door. He knocks on the window and he gives him the thumbs up and points to the smile. I'm like, yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah,
it is. And at the same time, you're watching in agony as these characters are all in, you know, current time dealing with the aftermath of this shooting and the flashing back and forth. I think either story on its own would have been decent, but the way that they're placed together just makes it phenomenal.
Yeah, it's roller coaster style. Yeah, it was phenomenally done.
You know, I never, until that point, I never disliked Vice President Hoynes. I never liked him and I never disliked him. But it was in those episodes where he steps up, you know, where the press conference with the UCLA team ends, and then you know he talks about, and then you see the flashback to the to his campaign, and then you know he talks about it in the present tense, and that was the first time I actually saw merits to the character. I'm like, you know what? It kind of made me wish that every time he was on screen, there wasn't an adversarial thing going.
It gave him some more depth. Absolutely.
Yeah, I can see that. That makes a lot of sense. He is a sticky character, though. You know, he's a character that, you know, in one episode, Leo's kicking his ass because he didn't, you know, quote, give full throated support to, you know, I don't remember the what the bill was or the policy. And I'm making myself look bad on a West Wing podcast. but then, like, when Leo comes to him about Jenny, and he's being so, you know, kind, generous, you know, don't worry, I'll take care of it, it's in the bag, and you're like, yeah, you know, I like this side of this character, because aside from that, he's a prick. But, you know, they do that, I mean, obviously for a reason. But it did add a certain amount of depth to the character that just wasn't there before.
Absolutely.
For fun factor's sake, and for feel good television sake, my favorite episode has always been, and probably will always be, somebody's going to emergency, somebody's going to jail, yeah. Because while it does have its serious moments, it's also, because like that speech, that speech that Sam has at the end, where he said, you know, the, you know, when Donna says it was, you know, it was 50
latitude
years ago, why does it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, I don't know. It's just so, it gets you right there, you know. But and when he says, you know, she's like, 50 years, what's the big deal? He said it matters a great deal because, you know, this country is an idea. And right then and there, it sort of put into words how I always felt about the systems that we have in place in the country. Yeah, they're not perfect, but it's an idea, and it's always a work in progress idea. Mm-hmm. And it's great because, you know, there's no, you know, you realize it's never finished. You know, it keeps going. But for emotional impact, like pure gut punch, emotional impact along the lines of those two, I have to give it to, I have to give it to, Manchester. I don't know why, but for some reason, mm-hmm. those episodes just, they do it for me. Yeah. All the tension amongst the staff and the way they're butting heads, with the people that have now been hired to run the campaign. And then you get more, like you get the flashback to when Leo, you know, it's just it matters. And then when, you get the governor's mansion, and then mm-hmm. and then when CJ is trying, she's trying to have a semi. Easy conversation with the first lady, and then Abigail says to her, "Don't ever come to me with unnamed sources again." Yeah. I'm like, "Oh, CJ, stay the fuck out of her way." Those episodes. I'm like, I was watching them again last week. I'm like, you know what? They never fail to do it. And then when Bruno says, "I'm gonna lock all of you in this barn and set it on fire." I feel the same way. And then somebody makes a joke about a snake.
It's a garter snake.
And then you got Toby and oh god,
and Josh.
No, the other guy. The guy that keeps saying, "What's Toby's
Bruno?
Problem with?"
Oh, Doug.
Doug. You know, when they have that talk in the kitchen.
Oh yes.
And then outside of that, when Sam is talking to Connie and he says, "It seems to me like your job is just to say what Doug really meant was."
When he walks out of the room, yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's great. In fact, at that moment I wanted them to start dating. But it's just those episodes. I'm like, it's funny, but it's never sad, and that's good, because when you watch Two Cathedrals or In Excelsior Deo or In the Shadow of Gunmen, I cry every time. I just do.
It's not that I cry. It's just that I get something in both of my eyes, and I don't know what it is, but So I have...
You just miss your boys, right?
Yeah, yeah. I miss my boys.
Oh, God, that... Oh, my God. Right. When Mrs. Landingham right gives... when she talks about that it was Christmas, and then she talks about, I miss my boys, and Charlie's just like, oh, okay, kind of like, well, wow.
Like, what do you say to that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's at that point, you didn't realize she had kids at one point. And then you find out that you know, she lost both of them. And, you know, me, I'm a dad. And I can put myself in that place and just think to myself, you could never, I mean, if I'm away from my kids for even a day, it's like I'm, you know, it hurts. But to imagine that, you know, something like that could happen and, you know, you'd hold on to it for that long. It's, man, that's powerful stuff.
Well, you know, absolutely. To, real quick point is, if you notice when, and I don't know if you guys listen to the West Wing Weekly, but
I do. Yeah, I listen to it. Sometimes it irritates the shit out of me, but I listen to it. Yeah.
But the interesting part is that they mentioned is, if you ever notice something happens or Charlie gets told about some tragedy or something like that, his answer to it is almost always just okay. Like, that's all he says, you know.
But you know, once that was pointed out to me, watching the intonation that he can put into that word in so
incredible.
Many different ways is, oh my gosh, amazing.
Is incredible. It's one of those things like it's almost blasphemy to think about anybody else in those roles. Because like the first choice for Bartlett was Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
And then I think Robert Redford was also on that list, but I could be wrong.
I'd seen Jason Robards was on the list.
Okay. But you know, in thinking about that, it would just be such an entirely different show. And with good measure, but also considering the fact that after the pilot was shot, they completely restructured the show to have the president in every episode.
Right.
Because that wasn't the initial plan, because it was just supposed to be about staff, which I'm sure you guys already know.
And in fact, you watch the first few episodes and you think, I could see where they would have gone with that, but I don't think the show would have had the legs, the longevity, and it wouldn't have made it for even three seasons if it was just about the staff without you know.
I agree. Not that any of them are bad, except for Mandy. No, it's just, it's a completely different world with Bartlett there all the time. One question I have for you guys is, and this is an odd question, but you guys still with me?
I think we lost
Natalie. Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
not sure what happened there.
One question I have for you guys, and my answer is the obvious answer to this, but if you were introducing someone to this show and you wanted them to get the full effect as quickly as possible with one episode, what is the episode you would show them?
The Stackhouse Filibuster. No question asked.
Holy shit, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's not one that I would have thought of, but wow, that's a really good choice. See, I was gonna say, hi Frank, welcome to the show. I mean honestly I was sort of thinking about, I mean, all right, I know you said one episode, but I would have thought that a two-parter, like like 20 Hours in America or something, mm-hmm. because it's fun, and you get and you get the truly political side at the same time. But man, the Stackhouse filibuster, that's an excellent choice.
See, yeah, I think you guys outdid me. You what did you say? Bested my.
what was your guess?
Mine was just the pilot, because you get so much from Bartlett just in that tiny section of the episode that he's in at the end, and you get, you know, it's just it's a fantastic pilot, and I think it does an incredible job introducing the show. But I definitely see merit to everything that's been said so far.
Well, Frank, what's your?
I think I would also go with Mr. Willis from Ohio.
Mm. Oh,
fair point.
That's a decent choice too. Yeah.
In fact, that's a great civics lesson. I mean, yeah. They pointed out in the episode it's a great civics, but I mean, really, you see, it's a good window into how just the average person would do if they were thrust in to a political office like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a big fan so far of Designated Survivor, but that is an example of how a normal person would not be if thrown into a political office all of a sudden. Wow, Mr. Willis, that's a good choice.
Yeah, excellent.
You know, I understand why Mr. Willis never showed up again, but man, it would have been nice if in a later season he would have just visited the White House or something, and just so we could have seen him again.
Yeah, or like during the Santos years, he could have like decided that he did want to run for a seat on his own.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh man,
that would.
Oh man,
great.
Now I'm so mad they never did that. I'm so mad. Before I was just disappointed. Now I'm just a little pissed.
Yes.
Frank, welcome to the show. My question before was, you know, what's your favorite episode? Because we mentioned Two Cathedrals, Manchester parts 1 and 2, and In the Shadow of Two Gunmen. What's your go-to favorite episode?
So I've actually started watching it again from the beginning. I started right before the election, just to drown out all the political noise. And so I'm currently on season 6. But for me, and I can't remember the name of the episode, but it was the one where Bartlett plays chess with Toby and Sam.
Oh,
And he just come back from India. He's got the chess set.
God damn it. What is that episode called?
Is it The Women of Kumar? No.
Is that it?
No. It has to do with Taiwan.
Taiwan, that's right.
It has to do with that. Hold on, I'll find it. But
it's in season 4, I know.
Yeah, it's in season 4. But the thing I liked about it was the first time that you saw... it's actually in season 3. It's
the hell? I cannot remember the name of that damn episode.
Hartsfield's Landing.
Hartsfield Landing. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yep.
And the reason I love this episode is twofold, actually. First, the whole back and forth that the president is doing with both of them. So he's being really nice and really observant of Sam, and he's letting Sam do things, and then he's coming in, and he's being really hard on Toby, like when Toby starts, you know, telling him, hey, you know, you don't have to be this, like, sissy type person, you know, regular politician. You can be smart. You can be who you are.
Right.
You're not that guy. Don't try to be that guy. You'll never be that guy. It'll never happen.
Yeah.
And the part I love the best about that is when he gets up to go deal with Sam, and he's like, listen, don't cheat. I know where the pieces are on your board. I know where the pieces are on Sam's board. And then he throws in the name of his friend who taught him chess.
David Wheaton.
And I still know where the pieces are on David Wheaton's board. And to me, that just shows you, first of all, how incredibly brilliant Bartlett is. That he can still remember that. You know, you're talking like easily 40 years.
Right.
Since that moment that he played chess with this guy. at the last time. And he still remembers where the pieces are. And then the other scene I like is when he's talking to Sam, and Sam wants to figure out what's in the note that Leo hands him. And Sam nails it for the most part. Like, he, you know, he missed some years with the Destroyers. But he tells Sam, you're going to run for office one day. You're going to, you know, you're going to run for president one day. Don't be scared. You're going to do great.
Yeah. You know?
And that to me is like, that's the only one he ever tells that to on the whole staff. He never tells that to anybody else.
Right.
Yeah.
I also love, I've seen an interview with Rob Lowe talking about how he actually grew up living down the street from Martin Sheen. And he talks about how the Sheens was the house that everyone hung at, like, after school and stuff. And he talks about the relationship that he had with Martin Sheen before they even started the show. And he mentions that scene as being so powerful for him individually because of the relationship that they had outside of the show as well.
That's right.
It's such a fatherly scene. Like, it's like, you know, and the only other moment he has fatherly is when he refers to Josh as his son in Two Cathedrals.
Yeah.
Or when he passes the knives to Charlie.
Right before he puts the cigarette out, and when he gives the knife to Charlie.
Yeah. Yeah, that, when he says, my son, that was my son, it just, again, you know, things in my eyes, stuff in my eyes.
Yep. Yeah. What was Josh Lyman? A warning shot?
Yeah.
He was my son.
One thing about that scene that Sorkin said, because Sorkin was on the West Wing weekly, and he said when they shot that scene that he went to the clergy that were there and said to them, this is hysterical, but said to them, listen, you know, he's gonna curse God in this scene. You know, and I just want to let you know, I don't want it to come off as disrespectful, blah, blah, blah. Just wanted to let you know that this is going to happen. And apparently one of the clergy looked at him and goes, I know, it's going to be great.
That's funny because, you know, the one thing he didn't share with them is that,
he
put a cigarette out on the floor. Yeah.
I assumed he probably didn't share that.
It would have run. And now, as a result, nobody can film in the National Cathedral.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the last scene that was ever filmed in there.
Interesting.
Oh, is that okay? You know what? I've heard that, but I didn't know if it was actually true,
or
if that was sort of an urban legend.
That was it. That was they were like, okay, yeah, no more.
Interesting. Why is that not shocking?
That's why Leo's funeral doesn't take place in the National Cathedral; it takes place elsewhere.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why.
Huh. Interesting. Thanks, Martin Sheen.
Yeah, right.
But it was so worth it. If that's the price that the world had to pay, well, you know, it's a good one.
It's such a great ending to the scene, though. It's so perfect.
Yeah, there's... You
know. Absolutely.
Yeah, that scene, as I said before, I'm firmly convinced that that's the best scene to ever come across television screens. But that's me.
It's a really good scene. Oh, it's a very good scene.
You know, it's just once, something, my kid, last year, she's 12 now, but she was 11 at the time that, there was something that she was supposed to do, and for whatever reason she wasn't doing it. And it gave me a flashback to like a conversation that the same conversation my mother had with me when I was the same age, because my kid drives me absolutely nuts because she's so much like me. I'm like, oh my God, all my worst qualities, all of them. But there was something that she was supposed to do, and she just, for whatever reason, she was not going to do it. And I said to her, and I flat out said to her, I said, if it's something that you don't want to do, or if it's something that you really just, that you really don't feel right about, then All right, we'll go with that. But if you're not doing it because you think it'll be too hard, well then, God, kid, I don't even want to know you. and she looked at me like, eh. You know what, Mrs. Landingham was so funny because she tells Jed, well, I'm the older sister that you never had, but you need one. But it's more like I didn't have an older sister either. But it's like, wow, she's the older sister that, you know, that every brother probably should have, whether you have an older sister or not. And then, God, for them, oh my God, for them to just come right out and at the end of the second season when all this other shit is piling up, and then they decide that Mrs. Landingham has to go, it's like, oh my God, what are you doing? I mean, it's funny because Catherine Justin, she said that was the best thing that ever happened to her career because, you know, she had acting jobs, you know, for 40 years, but said when they did that and she got to play that role and then deliver that dialogue in that episode, she said she never had trouble. Never went without work again after that.
Oh, I can't imagine.
She went to Desperate Housewife for a while there. She was the crazy old lady on Desperate Housewife.
The raw emotion, man. When the West Wing gets deep with the emotion. Yeah, you know, it's tough. That's why I make no bones about the fact that, there's plenty of times I cry about it. And then there's times when, you're happy when, one of my favorite zinger moments is when CJ, talks to the guy, from the process stories about, the guy that was claiming to have been an advisor on the campaign.
Yeah.
And, my God, I'm like, you know what?
Chris Whitaker.
That couldn't have been any more satisfying if she just kicked him in the nuts.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And you know, when she goes and tells Bruno, and Bruno's like, who cares?
That was better, because Bruno can't. First of all, Bruno's like different kinds of names, like Wickenburg, Wickenstein.
Wittgenstein, yeah.
And then she finally tells him the name. He's like, yes, from Cook County. Why? What do I care? Like, I already got paid. I think you've got better things to do. Leave him alone. It doesn't matter. Let him talk. Who cares? He doesn't know anything. And she just keeps going and going. And every time she annoys him again, he's like, seriously, I'm talking to this girl. You know, let me talk to this girl. You know, I have all the clout I need to talk to this girl. Leave me alone.
Yeah. See, but
and there's like there's a still in my office, a real still. He's like, I heard. I'm coming. Don't worry.
But I completely understand that. Like, if I, as petty as it is, if I did something, I don't care what it is, and someone else is taking credit for it. Yeah, I'm gonna go at them for it. Like, so I get her. I get her point of view on that.
Love that she wasn't even mad about her work. She was mad about Bruno and Leo. Like, right. I love. She's like, you don't disrespect Leo, and you don't disrespect Bruno.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
And you know, here's the thing. What cracks me up about that is that this guy is standing here in the White House saying this stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, dude. What do you do? I mean, if he's outside the White House, if he's talking to someone, that's fine. But you're standing there in the ballroom saying this stuff.
Yeah.
What did he think was going to happen? And honestly, CJ was a lot more level-headed about it than they could have been. What if Toby had been the one to talk to him?
Oh,
that
yeah.
guy would
oh,
be man. Crying.
Oh, that would have been.
But the show, and God, when it's funny, it's funny. Yeah. Lionel Tribby I was going to ask this question anyways, so I'm going to say my very favorite one episode only character is him. when he's talking about, I will kill people today, Leo. I will kill people with this cricket bat. It was given to me by the Queen of, you know, Queen Mary or whatever. And that was just before that, you know, he had been telling Ainsley that on, you know, on TV he's making a full throw to, you know, defense of the president. But, you know, he's fine in real life. And then he's like, Leo! And then, because just before that she'd said, he's fine with you hiring me, and then you haven't told him yet. I have, in fact, not told him yet. he just, you know, he stormed into the Oval Office in front of all those dozens of people, and he says all this, and I'm just like, this guy, I know he didn't need to come back for a second episode, but I wouldn't have minded seeing him some more, but he was absolutely classic.
Yeah. I have this habit of trying to interject West Wing lines into my everyday life, whether
me too, or not. It usually fails because I don't really know any other wing nuts.
Well, one that I like to use just to mess with people is I'll be like, oh, is that your umbrella? Because I love the way he says that. It cracks me up every time.
That's a good one.
And I'm supposed to have drinks in my hand. Little umbrellas.
Yeah. Little umbrellas.
Yeah.
And the one I use all the time is, you just stand there. You just stand there being wrong.
Yeah.
You just stand there.
You stand there in your wrongness and be wrong. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, and get used to it.
I use that one all the time. I use that one all the time.
I do too. I'm pretty sure we all use that one.
Absolutely.
I think. So, who are your favorite one-time guest stars, or the ones that you know? It's just sheer pleasure just to watch them play that part in that single episode.
I had someone for this earlier, and I can't remember who it was. I'll think.
Can't narrow it down.
I'll think of it. I promise.
I like the cartographers from Blake's Block of Cheese Day.
I love the people that wanted the Wolves Only Highway because of the story of Pluie
on the other Big Block of Cheese Day.
The Peter's projection map and. Yeah. You know, they talk about France, nothing's where you think it is. I'm just like, after all these years, you know, the Mercator is still in the, I'm like, huh, boy, you know, I really do wish they just changed that.
I think I'm going to have to go with Edward James Olmos. I know that's kind of cheating because he was actually in two episodes, but as Judge Mendoza, he just has this presence that he brings onto the screen. And I would have loved if they could have thrown him into a few scenes throughout the rest of the show.
To be fair, Edward James Olmos, no matter what he plays, pretty much has that effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time he walks on screen, I just want to go, so say we all.
that guy's got screen presence that never ends. Just sad because last season... on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he was in like four episodes and they killed him off. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You get Edward James Olmos and you kill him? Really?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
But he's great. Well, yeah, he was in two episodes, but it's a technicality because in the first episode he was in, he was literally just there for like a minute.
Right.
And then when in Celestial Navigation, you know, that's another one that. It might not be the single episode that I would point out.
But it's got to be up there.
if somebody said, I want to watch it and give me one episode, then I give them one of the ones that we named. But if somebody said, give me a couple, and they don't have to be in order or anything, because I just need the highlights, because I'm trying to figure out what it is about the show that you like so much. Celestial Navigation would probably be number three or four that I'd mention.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because it's not necessarily a good standalone episode, only because you need the setup of them trying to get Mendoza confirmed, and you have to get a little bit of a sense of who Josh already is before that episode, but. CJ in that episode absolutely stands on its own. I'm sorry.
Her and her woo canal.
Woo canal. I woo canal is the, you know what? Last year, I had to get a tooth pulled, and they asked me, do you want to get a root canal? And I told them, well, no, because honestly, I never had one, but from what I understand, sometimes don't get it all, so you have to go back a couple times. I told them, honest to God, no, just take the damn tooth out. I don't want to keep coming back. But I did briefly think to myself, you know, they do give me a root canal. I can do that. Root canal.
So my answer to that question is a one episode but two person answer. And it's almost to
you're going to say the Supremes.
I know where you're going.
I am going to say the Supremes. And it's Glenn Close and William Fichtner. Glenn Close in that episode is as good as she has ever been, ever. She, when she's going around the, and she's walking Toby and Josh through her answers for the judiciary and how she's going to play rope-a-dope with one of them until he forgets what his question was is just brilliant. And Fichtner, I think, is probably one of the most underrated actors in Hollywood.
I will agree with that. Absolutely.
I agree with that. My favorite role he ever played was in The Perfect Storm, but that guy, he's good in everything.
He was on Prison Break for, I don't know if it was the entire series. I don't remember. I never watched the last season.
He was in the second season and the last season.
And
that guy's so good. I badly want to see him. They're making all these Star Wars movies now. Please, God, put him in the Star Wars movie. I badly want to see him in the Star Wars movie. I don't care what part he plays. I don't care if he's – I don't care. Just put him in one.
Yeah. I agree. Such a good actor.
And I mean, I've always loved, too, when Josh and Toby step out of the room and Josh is like, I love her. I love her mind. I love her shoes.
I love her shoes.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
That's so ridiculous, but it's such a...
It's so perfect, though.
Yeah, for her in the part that we just saw, it's like, huh, yeah, I get it. I totally know where he's coming from on that. Now, who are I want to go with, who's your favorite recurring character? Like, I mean, you can go with Ainsley. You know, was in a bunch of episodes. Or just somebody who was in a few episodes.
That's easy for me. Mine is John Amos as Fitzwallace.
You know what? I'll confess right now, there's a few episodes that I do skip, and with the last two episodes of season 5, when he comes out of retirement to go to the Middle East and for the peace talks, and the convoy gets bombed and he gets killed. You know what? I know that shit happens in real life. You know, people come back from overseas and, you know, only to die in the streets. And, you know, that stuff all happens. But for that character, I really wish that they had done one of two things. Either one, if you have to bring back another character, bring back somebody that we saw less of, get Secretary Berryhill or Gino, just somebody that with diplomatic stuff that we had seen less of, or I wish they would have done to really add stakes, because the injured Donna, they kill Fitzwallace, and then they kill off two nameless senators. Congressmen that had names, but they didn't have faces. We never even saw them.
Yeah,
I really think that they should have killed Andy along with him just to truly up the stakes and just to show how bad it was that Andy and Fitzwallace both died. And it would have justified why Toby kept saying, you're not going, you can't go, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think at the same time, it would have really shown, it would have been special for Donna because she would have been the one that made it out, the one that made it out. She could have had a little bit of the survivor's guilt that she always felt bad for Josh having. And then on top of that, and I'm going to say it right now, it would have prevented that bullshit story with the leak about the space shuttle.
Yeah.
Because he would have been the only parent that Molly and Hawk had, and yeah, they would not have been able to do that to him.
Fair point.
But I just, it makes me mad. Whenever I watch the show all the way through, there's a couple episodes every season that I tend to skip anyways. Partially, usually it's because I just don't care that much about the episodes. A couple of them, it just, they bother me. But that one I watch simply because it hurts. Not in a makes me cry sort of way. It's depressing because it's like, really? That was just a shitty way to go about it. I don't know. I wish that they'd done that with somebody else. But then at the same time, they do the same thing with Agent Gibbs. Mm-hmm. You know, he just all of a sudden, boom, gone. I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah.
But yeah, that thing with Fitz Wallace, it hurts.
Yeah. That one for me is rough. I actually just watched that episode last night because I'm currently in the middle of a watch. For me, as I mentioned before, I'm one of those monsters that doesn't skip episodes even when I don't like them. But for me, the only episode that is like that is, and I can't remember the name, but the one where CJ goes to
the long Ohio. Goodbye. Yeah,
long goodbye. Goodbye. Skip it. Skip
I
it.
I cannot handle that episode. I watch it anyway, because the
You're
ending.
Completionist.
I'm a masochist and a completionist and, you know, a bunch of other things. But Matthew Modine, you know, he does a great job in that episode, but it's too far out of the realm, you know.
You know what? Matthew Modine, he's great and all, but he's such a dick. He always annoys me. So when he's in that role, I'm like, yeah, just another role for Matthew Modine to irritate me in.
Fair point.
But you know what? I skipped that one only because it's not. Well, here's the thing. It is sad and it's horrible. And, you know, I've seen the ravages of Alzheimer's. I've seen what it does to people. And it sucks. So it's tough to watch it on that note. But
yeah.
You know what? The other thing that makes it real tough is, I mean, you realize that CJ's father is going downhill. You realize just how bad his health actually is. And then I think following that, they mention him a couple times because, like, Toby asks, how's your father and things like that. But that's it. I mean, other than that, it's like they call it the long goodbye because of his condition, and it's CJ having to go home and face this, but it's also kind of like a, honestly, it's a goodbye to the plot line, because other than that, they really just don't make any more than, I think, two or three references to him for the rest of the show.
Yeah, and
after
most
that,
of the time, it's Toby asking her how he is. You know, I think if it's three times, it's twice that Toby asks her.
Yep,
I think so. One thing that I think that episode does illustrate better than almost anything else is
what the staff has to give up to serve at the pleasure of the president.
Yeah, that's true.
I do think that that really pushes that point home very
That's true, because that's I think the only point. Other time we get a sense of that is when Leo makes a speech to his wife in the first season, and he says, for these few years, this is more important than my marriage, and you realize, well, yeah, it's not a job that I could do. You know, I mean, I've got kids, so I wouldn't be, but I can't put myself in that place. But long before I had kids, I had a friend in D.C. who I was living in Virginia, and he came down for a semester of school to intern for a senator from Montana. And I would call him, and, you know, it'd be like Sunday or something. I'd call him and, you know, just say, hey, and he'd be like, yeah, nah. So I'm on the way to the office. I'm like, it's Sunday. He's like, we're always on call. I mean, he was, you know, an intern. They're not paid. You know, he's not staff, but they were always on call. I mean, he'd tell me that, you know, Friday night he was there, and then they were back, you know, Saturday afternoon, and then, you know, they were there until Saturday. And it is just not something that, you know, whether you've got kids or a spouse or dependents of any kind, or I don't think whether even if you're just a person that's by yourself and completely on your own, not everybody could do it because they literally have no schedule. They have no way to they can't plan anything. I mean, how many times you see that they got plans and you know, every time Sam's saying he's got some place to be, or Josh says I got some place to be, or it's like, well, you know, they're not going to get there.
They do it with Donna ten times. And I think, you know, in watching the series again, I think with Donna, Sorkin did it to, as Josh's way of screwing with Donna to make sure that she can't have a social life, because he's a dick. I love him. He's a great character.
I would say he's great. But
you could just see so many times that it was written in that manner to do that. And, you know, he would make jokes about it or whatever, but he was dead serious about it the whole time, and he would just never admit it to anybody, including himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet everybody saw through that ploy.
Everybody saw it.
I would say the congressman showed up to talk to him, and, you know, he says, well, why do you do that to her? He's like, well, I'm saving her the trouble of having a failed relationship. But it's more like, well, you can't have a social life if the rest of us can't.
Have a social life if it's not with me.
Exactly.
Exactly. And that's what everybody pointed out to him. They're like, well, why don't, you know, aren't you guys dating? No, why? No, why would you say that?
Yeah.
Really?
Because like, everybody in the universe.
Well, there's a great scene with him and Reese. And he's like, listen, I have an age. I don't think I've talked about him ever.
Yeah.
In the amount of, like, the amount that you've talked to me about Don today.
Right.
In the 7 minutes we've known each other.
Right.
The entire time I've known.
Yeah. And then of course he says, well, hook me up, we'll go out double date. He's like, oh, his name is so and so, and he's like, I got the fuzzy end of that lollipop. Which is one of my favorite lines. That's so ridiculous. But I've used that a couple times in real life too.
I use it all. In fact, I just posted that. Someone asked, like, what's your favorite inside joke from the show. That was my reply.
The end of that lollipop. You know what? You're right. He says, in the few minutes I've known you, you've talked more about your assistant, and, you know, you know more about her than most people ever will. And it's like, huh, you know what? Yeah. I mean, and then there's that scene before inauguration, and, you know, they show up to Donna's apartment, and, you know, they're throwing snowballs, and they're screaming and yelling. That's hilarious. But, you know, she leaves the apartment, she's wearing that dress, and he's like, you know, he lights up and he's like, you look amazing. And I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, oh my God, you know, it's like, just, you know,
just screw already.
It's just more like, God, just pick her up, sweep her off her feet, and just go. Just stop it. And even Danny King Cannon's like, just do it.
Yeah.
Everybody notices. I mean, you know, the first thing Leo tells him, hey, if you've got somewhere else you need to be, get the fuck out of here. Go. What are you doing?
Or like in the Christmas episode when he's like, Leo sent Donna on the helicopter to go see Jack Reese. And he's like, are you all right? Like, pull yourself together.
Pull yourself together, man. Yeah. That's,
because it's like everybody noticed it. You know, anybody he tried to date, like, pointed it out to him. Amy points it out to him at one point.
Even Amy just flat out says to Donna one day, are you in love with Josh? And, it's like, because even, I could be wrong, but, God, doesn't Joey Lucas even bring it up at one point?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because she tells him that if she pulled 100 Donnas, he'd say that he'd go out with her.
That's right. Yeah, and that's after Donna made the goofy comment about if you got married and you got the same initials, so you wouldn't have to get your towels re-monogrammed. the show just, I don't know, it's like there's a few episodes that I skip. In fact, I'll ask you, like, even the episodes that I don't like are the ones that I skip. That doesn't mean it's because they're terrible. It's just because they don't fit the you know what? These episodes never, ever, 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 ever fit the mood that I'm in, no matter what. Whether I'm happy, sad, annoyed, disgusted, or down, none of these episodes ever fit any of the moods. But, I mean, so, what are the episodes besides, like, The Long Goodbye? What do you skip? David, this doesn't apply to you because you're a completionist.
You're a monster.
So I'm not far off from being a completionist, so I'll go next to get mine out of the way before we do any others. I literally have one episode that I skip, and it's one that I actually find interesting, but after watching it once, it holds no value for me, and it's the one where they end up interviewing all of the past.
Is that Access?
Access. Yeah. I watched that.
No, not Access. Access is the one with CJ doing the press conferences and stuff. That's the one that focuses on her.
Oh, you're talking the West Wing special episode.
Yes, the special episode. That's
the
one I skip every time.
You know what? Correction. I do skip that one. Forgive me.
Yep.
You know what? And in my mind, because I always skip that episode, and in my mind, and see, I always skip Access too, and in my mind, they are forever mixed up into one episode. I always think that that's just one episode that covers all the bases, and I can't stand it, and then it turns out I can't stand either of them, because as it's been pointed out, no, they're not the same episodes. I'm like,
the
good.
I
hate
enjoy
both of them.
Because I feel like it shows how far CJ has come in her role. I really feel, because it's a flashback to, like, their first year that we never saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it gives a really nice contrast to how much she's grown in her job.
Oh, that's true. You know what? It's just, it's kind of one of those where there's lots of flashbacks on the show. And I think that's the one. It's not that those flashbacks don't work. It's that they don't have the same spirit that all the other flashbacks had. So skip it. But so that's it, though. You don't really.
Other than that, I watch them all. Yep.
I don't know, Frank. Are you a completionist too, or are there episodes
so here's my problem. I'm a completionist as far as the Sorkin written episodes go. I will watch all of them, even The Long Goodbye. But my problem is when I get to season 5, I don't skip episodes, but I find myself fast forwarding.
Mm.
Like, it took me 2.5, almost 3 weeks to get through seasons 1, 2, 3, and 4. Right? It took me like a week, maybe, to get through season 5. So And part of the problem is that it's not that I think the writing is bad, because I think Wells did a pretty good job considering that he's never written episodes before until season five. Even in ER, he let other people write the episodes.
You'll say he was the producer, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but he did some of the writing in West Wing. So it's not like I thought it was bad, because he did keep a lot of the Sorkinisms, but I just didn't like the story. Like, after they find Zoe, between that and Shutdown, not a whole lot of that is exciting to me. And it's probably because of the fact that, you know, Bartlett's all over the place.
To your point about, you know, the transition from 4 to 5, because I'm literally, you know, reprocessing this, you know, over the last few days. Because I started season 5 again a couple days ago. There is a certain levity that is missing when season 5 starts. Not that season 5 should start with any funny business, because you've got Zoe missing, and I think, don't quote me on this, but I think that there was a consideration, if Sorkin had stayed on the show, that they might not have found Zoe alive. But
yeah,
I may be making that up.
Well, no. He said that. His idea that if he had stayed was that Zoe would not be found, and that would affect, obviously, Bartlett going forward, because now he's not, you know, all there most of the time, and it affects everything, and, you know,
okay,
it makes a mess, it would do this, it would do that. He said there would be more storyline in that respect.
I didn't realize that Aaron Sorkin had actually commented on that, because I like those episodes, but my sense was always that when they find her, it's so... They don't spend... What?
Random?
Yeah, it's just... It's all of a sudden, it's just there. There's no setup for it. It's just... It's there. The storyline didn't linger like it should have. It didn't last as long as it should. And
they had this phenomenal setup with, you know, the whole separation of powers and Bartlett stepping down and, you know, John Goodman's character taking over. And then they did so little with it. Like, there was so much opportunity to really dive into some storylines with that.
I really wish that Glenn Allen Walken had actually been the president for 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah. That would have been magnificent.
I mean, he was so good that for that part, for those 3 episodes, you know, he got an Emmy. He won the Emmy for that role. But so part of it is because he was just that good, and part of it is just because they dropped it too fast. Mm-hmm. I really think if they had to find her. Because honestly, the way they set that up, there was not supposed to be a happy ending on that. It turned out to have long-term, you know, things anyways, but I don't think they were supposed to find her. And you're right, it's random. It's all of a sudden tacked on at the very end of the episode. You see all the lights and she's just there. And it's like, what?
Yeah,
You know, you expect that it's going to go on for the first few seasons, because you're right, they set it up, you know, the 25th Amendment, and the Speaker of the House resigns and he takes over as the president. And
imagine if he had appointed a Republican vice president while Bartlett was stepped down and he got, you know, and it went through. Imagine what they could have done with that for the rest of the series.
That would have been awesome, too.
Yeah, that
would have been awesome. I really just, every time, because I really like those episodes, but every time I feel like, in fact, this plays on one of the questions I was going to ask later, was it's a storyline that had amazing setup, and then it just, it, it,
fizzled.
I don't want to say it fizzles quite.
I don't think it fizzled. It was poor execution.
Yeah, it
didn't live up to its fullest potential.
Yeah, it lands before it was supposed to. It doesn't. I don't even think it was a missed opportunity so much as it just, they ended the storyline faster than they should have.
Right.
I think it would have been great if he had been president long enough that he had to appoint a vice president. Of course, with my luck, he would have picked Halfley, and then I would have just been ready to tear the screen off the television.
Nobody likes Halfley. I actually like Halfley. I think.
Whoa!
Hold on. As a villain, he's great.
I think they missed an opportunity with Halfley. They built him up for like two episodes, you know, where he's like, you know, the man on the hill. Everybody, you know, he's got everybody in a tizzy. Nobody's going to be able to get anything done. Halfley's the power broker. Blah 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 blah. And then in one episode, Josh basically cuts his legs off.
Well, yeah,
but I don't think that he was wasted in terms of, because he's the speaker that decided to keep the president waiting. You know, he's the one.
No, I know, and I love all that, but I think they could have drawn that out more.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I think they could have drawn out his power trip a little more. It was such a great moment. Like, you've got this guy who basically doesn't agree with anything you say. He's in control, and there's nothing you can do about it. But you walking up to Capitol Hill, that's it. He's done.
Although that's true. Well,
they still keep his personality the same, though. I mean, if you think forward to like the stem cell bill and stuff like that, he's still trying to pull it.
And the thing with the congressman, also, you know, you have to go to war, blah blah blah. But it's not the same.
That's true.
Like, he kind of fades away. Like, he's still there. He's still a character. You still talk about him. He's still
That's true, because it's funny, because then in the sixth season, they talk about the speaker's coming over, and you see him briefly just for a second, and then you realize, wait, it's not Halfley anymore.
It's not Halfley anymore.
They never okay, here's the thing. When Halfley gets the job, I love Josh's reaction when he says, oh, God, Halfley. Kind of like, oh, this is the worst thing that could have happened. But yeah, then you're right, he's gone. And then season six, Speaker of the House shows up, and it's like, where? They never explained that he stepped down. He lost it for the, you know, in the last midterm election. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as a villain, he's great. Kind of like Admiral Jellicoe on those episodes of TNG. I want to strangle the guy.
You know, to that point. To that point about, you know, if he had lost it during the midterms, I mean, that's an easy throwaway line, you know.
It is.
New speakers coming over, you know, since Halfley, you know, lost his seat for shutting down the government, you know. Obviously written better than that.
You could have had Josh make a joke about it. You could have had, you know.
Couldn't sit at the big boys' table, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that, I mean, that's an easy throwaway line, and I think they missed the boat on that. You know, but that's the thing. You know, Sorkin was notorious for that, for disappearing characters.
Mandyville.
Sending people up to Mandyville.
I was going
to
say, he wrote the character that phrase got coined for. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean.
At least he set up the premise for eliminating her, though.
Well, absolutely, that's true. But I mean, it's really funny if you think back that far, you know, that far back to the first season. Before there was Mandyville, her partner went to Mandyville.
That's very true.
That's true.
I don't even remember the character's name, but he walks into the office. They're talking, and then the next episode. Her ass
that's
is
right.
gone.
Josh, yeah, they make it seem like Josh is hiring both of them, and then that's funny. Well, it is so weird because in that first season, I know that most everybody hates Mandy, and you know what? The thing is, I completely understand why. I just don't share it. I don't like her. I'm not a fan. But I do wish that she had been written, that she had been formally written out of the show and a little later, because honestly, I would have loved to have seen what she would have done, first of all, in the shadow of two gunmen. It would have been interesting to see Moira Kelly actually have a reaction like everybody else got. And I think if they had, I mean, obviously, I would never wanted her to stay on for the whole run. She's definitely a character that I would have liked to have seen out before Bartlett's reelection. But I really would have liked to have seen what she would have done during the MS crisis.
Oh, she would have been insufferable.
Yeah.
Well, she would have been, but it would have been an interesting counterpoint to how easygoing about the entire thing that Leo always was. And, yeah. And you know, what a crazy person, you know, Toby was over it. And then how vulnerable Sam was in that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And how just sweet and caring Donna was during that. Mm-hmm. And just how understanding and supportive that Charlie was. I would have liked to have seen Mandy, and she would have dealt with it from the political side the same way, because when Toby finds out, what's he do? He goes straight to the political implications.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
She would have done the same thing, and I would have liked to have seen Mandy react to it in the same political way, but it would have been in a very different way than the way Toby would, because she would have been unsure what to do next for the sake of the party.
Right.
Where Toby was all about how terrible it was. not for, and it wasn't in terms of the party, how upset he was about how wrong the whole thing had been up until that point. Like, Toby never talks about what's going to happen next. He talks about how this never should have happened in the first place. Yeah. And Mandy would have just been like, well, here's where we need to go from here, which is what they were trying to do with the members of the Democratic committee that go in to talk to Leo when he says, you think you're the first person to say you should resign? You're the 35th person this morning.
Yeah.
I wish we could have seen Mandy in terms of what happened there. Now, after that storyline, she could have gone, like, she wouldn't have needed to be there even for the re-election campaign. But yeah, I wish we could have just seen a little bit more with her. But I'll admit, I told Natalie and David at the outset, I'm not a fan of hers, but I don't hate her. I could tolerate her for the same way in some ways. I kind of like Pulaski on TNT. So, you know, and nobody else does. Everybody else hates both of them. But I wish she'd gotten a little bit more than just because, you know, you see her in What Kind of Day Has It Been? And then, you know, she never mentioned it again. But, yeah, I kind of wish, because after that, I don't think she could have been a regular character, but I just think it would have been interesting if she would have been a recurring character that would have just showed up like every few episodes or something. You know,
I always found it interesting that with the timing of when she did leave the show, why they didn't have her be one of the people taken out in the shooting.
Yeah, like, that was interesting.
That was the episode she left on. Why didn't they use that to their advantage to explain where she went?
Yeah. You could have killed her here. Yeah.
I think that's because Sorkin didn't want to give her any more importance.
Well,
that's a fair point.
No, honestly, that's true, because
I think he cast her, and he didn't realize that she wouldn't gel with the cast.
I was going to say,
yeah,
she had a lot of, like, he had a lot of trouble working with her, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, there was a lot of behind the scenes bullshit, right?
So, yeah, what I heard, yeah. I'm sorry, go on, Frank.
No, there was a ton, he's right, there was a ton of behind the scenes stuff, and she just wasn't mixing well with the cast.
What you I know, heard as well.
The problem that Rob Lowe had.
Yeah.
Where she was bigger than the cast and she wanted more and more and more and more. You know, and they weren't ready to do that.
For those of us who listen to the West Wing Weekly, I don't know if I asked that before you got here or not, Frank. But basically, I think it was either Sorkin, I think it was Tommy Shalhoub, though, said that. And he was mildly diplomatic about it, but you know, he said that Aaron has a way that he writes, and you can either perform the way that he likes, or you can't perform the way that he writes.
Yeah, because wasn't it the actress that plays Andy that said they told her straight away there's no improvisations, none for it.
Like, and Richard Schiff told her in their first scene, like, you don't pause for commas, you don't do this, you don't do this, you have to do this, you know, things like that. And that Moira Kelly just could not get, and I didn't know that there was so much heat behind the scenes with Moira Kelly, but that there was, that she just could not get the timing down, and I never grasped how true that was until I heard him say that, because I could not really understand why I didn't like her until he said that. When I heard him say that, the glass shattered and I was like, oh shit, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
I also think that they've always said that the reason that she initially was cast was to be a love interest for Josh. And right. I think that once they saw the chemistry between Bradley Whitford and Janelle Maloney.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah,
they did confirm that.
It overshadowed anything they could have done with Mandy.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, that's true. You know what? I honestly forgot about that entire aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I mean, they set her up at the beginning. You know, she's Josh's ex-girlfriend. And then,
right.
Yeah, now I remember. Yeah, I did read that she was supposed to be a love interest, but all of a sudden it was like, nope, because
Tommy Shalhoub, I believe he was the one that mentioned that again in that same episode of the West Wing Weekly, that with Donna there and how well Donna worked out, or Janelle Maloney worked out, that they made her a series regular in season two. And dropped Moira Kelly.
And I've always loved the fact that in the flashback in The Shadow of Two Gunmen that Donna hires herself.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially that's what Janelle Maloney did in this role.
That was another point that he made.
One episode role, and she just didn't let her leave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because she talked about, I don't know if it was, has she been on the West Wing Weekly?
She was. She was on an episode.
Yeah, okay. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But because I heard her on another podcast, or maybe it was Winging It. I'm not sure. But she mentioned that she had, you know, that she was waitressing, and she had a role, a one-episode role on Sports Night, you know, where she delivered a monologue, and honest to God, that's one of my favorite episodes of Sports Night, because she was so good playing that particular part that, and you know, without, because the first time I ever watched the West Wing all the way through, I didn't know any of that behind the scenes stuff. So it never would have occurred to me that she was never meant to be a mainstay character all the way through, because she just, from her first appearance, her first conversations with the rest of the cast, it seemed like she was magically always meant to be there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot like Charlie, he comes in the third episode, and all of a sudden it was like, oh that now it feels complete. Like it,
yeah,
it
this just, is the piece that was missing.
Mm-hmm. Like the pilot's great, and I agree that it's an excellent pilot. But it in Bartlett at the end, following the Southern Arboreal stop, and and the way he slaps down those
Mary Marsh and
Mary Marsh and L. Caldwell. Those scenes with Bartlett, they make the pilot for me. Honest to God, the entire rest of the pilot, I can take it or leave it, simply because it's and I have this problem with 90% of pilots I watch, where you can tell it's the pilot and it wasn't quite there yet, and it doesn't. I think it started to come together better in the brain fart. God damn it, the Latin thing. Post hoc ergo propter hoc. It started to come together there, but
27 Charlie, lawyers in the room, none of you know what post hoc ergo propter hoc means. Yeah,
that's funny. Well, it's funny because I was having the brain fart and I was thinking Latin and I was thinking quo vadimus, and I'm like, no, fuck, that's sports night. You know, that's the finale for sports night. But I it started to gel a little bit better in that one for me. But when Charlie comes in and he keeps telling Josh, I can't take this job, I want to be the male kid, or you know, or the what was it, the messenger, or
messenger,
and he keeps trying to tell him, I can't be an assistant, I can't do it, I can't do a full time job, and the more he sort of resisted, the more I thought, I mean, he was probably just afraid, part of it, and he was probably a little bit intimidated, but part of it was just, it's like, you want to hire the kid just because, right then you can see what Josh sees in him, that he's got all kinds of potential, and you gotta let him shine. But yeah, you can't tell that Donna, even in retrospect, you watch it, you can't tell that she wasn't meant to be, because she just immediately she was a shining light.
Yeah,
she's the only assistant level character who actually gets, you know, a spot in the credits, or is considered a series regular.
Well, and then she said, and then she got so excited because, you know, for the with the season two premiere, she is, you know, she called her dad all excited because that's it. She had been promoted to a main cast member, and they misspelled her name in the credits. Yeah. Which is funny because I don't know if for the streaming Netflix home video version, they changed the opening credits to reflect that her name is, like,
they corrected it, yeah.
Okay, so it was only in the broadcast version then, that okay, because I've looked and I'm like, it's not all right.
Yeah, but
I can't imagine that, you know, you finally get this career, this giant career move, and then you see that, you're like, oh fuck. I guess it's funny because now, well, one daughter goes, she takes, I mean, both daughters take dance. But one of them, she's in her fourth year at the school, and when she, the first year that she was signed up for it, they left the E off the end of her name, and every single year since then, we tell them, please correct it, because every year in the program for the recital, her name is misspelled, and year at the beginning of it, we tell her, you got to correct the name, you got to correct the name. I know damn well that at the end of this year, this is going to be recital number 5 that they still have her damn name misspelled. so it's so ridiculous. But I can't imagine you get this giant promotion and then you realize, oh, they misspelled the name. That sucks.
To that point, I think it was Sorkin, again, going back to one of these Sorkin or Tommy Shalhoub episodes of the West Wing Weekly, they were talking about the, I want to say, In the Shadow of Two Gunmen Part 1, when they go to White, one of them was telling a story about when it was first broadcast, they were having a broadcast party, and it goes to White, and it's supposed to have black text saying something like, what is it?
Like 3 years earlier.
3 years earlier. Or, yeah. And it was missing from the East Coast broadcast. And so I think it was Shlomi's going nuts. It might have been Sorkin. I can't remember. One of them is just going nuts, calling the network. What are you doing? You're where is it? Blah, blah, blah. And they fixed it for the West Coast broadcast. But that's not surprising at all.
No. It's funny because now I do. I listen to the podcast every week. Every Wednesday, I listen to it. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes, honestly, it drives me insane.
I find that I tend to prefer when they have guests on.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, you know what? I like when they have guests on because it's interesting to hear the guests speak. Double-edged sword, though, I find that when they have a guest on to talk about the episodes, because I love hearing the guests talk about all the behind-the-scenes stuff and mm-hmm. everything that goes into it, but there's a small nagging annoyance to me that they don't talk enough about the episodes at mm-hmm. the same yeah. time, especially when they had Tim Matheson on, and they talked... They talked about the episode, but not all that much. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, yeah, you've got a point because, like, when it is just Hrishikesh Hirway and Joshua Malina, at the same time, yeah, it can be a bit annoying when they're just nattering on and on about something or anything. Because I listen to it every week. I don't re-listen to it at all. I mean, I'm not one to re-listen to podcasts very often anyways, but I don't re-listen to it. And it sucks because, like, the interview episodes, like, with Aaron Sorkin, I heard it, but I don't remember any of it. And I always keep telling myself, I should go back and watch that again. Never do. It's good that you can point some of these things out because I heard all the interviews, but I don't remember any of it.
I probably like the episode or the podcast because I probably like it a lot more than I would if it were anything about anything else. Let's put it that way. I know that that's kind of an odd way to put it, but. If it were a podcast about anything else, I probably wouldn't be as interested in it. I love the background information, the details that there's really no other way you're going to get them unless get them direct.
That's true, and you know what what's impressive about that podcast is not only that how often they get guests, but how many of the guests. They've gotten how much of the main cast has now joined them for an episode. Mm-hmm. And then that surprise episode with Aaron Sorkin, who saw that coming?
No, exactly.
I mean, they always said that they'd have him on and they'd ask him, but
they never
didn't realize
that
he'd be doing a retrospective all of a sudden. And then they do, you know, they give you the two episodes that week because they do the Aaron Sorkin one first. I'm like, wow, who would have ever, you know? And they always talk about this masterclass. I haven't heard it. I'm not paying to hear it, but I would like to hear it. But did you listen to it? Is that where you heard Aaron Sorkin talk about how Zoe wouldn't have been found? Did it come from there?
No, it was an interview okay. The day right after. He left.
Mm. Okay.
Season 5 already, and they asked him, "Is this where you would have taken it?" And he's like, well, no, I mean, I like what, you know, I like what John and everybody did. But to be honest, I was going to go darker. They asked him to clarify. He's like, well, I'm not going to go into specifics, but Zoe would not have been hemmed.
Interesting to me, because one of the things that I think season 5 suffers for is the fact that it loses so much of the humor that Aaron Sorkin brings.
Right.
And even in his darkest moments, he has such phenomenal humor that I really would have loved to see how he would have handled that.
Yeah, that's...
But he was all burnt out at that point. I mean, he was writing every episode himself.
Well,
you know,
burnt out and blown away, but whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he had a lot more than just stress going on.
But it was as a result of writing every episode, you realize.
Oh, yeah,
so,
of course.
You know, he makes fun of that, actually, when he writes Studio 60.
Yeah.
The character of Matt Albee is totally Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah, definitely.
And I was going to say, you mean when Josh Molina was playing Aaron Sorkin?
When Matt Perry. Matthew Perry plays him.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I've only seen that show once all the way through, and it was earlier this year, because nobody really has it streaming.
Did Netflix pull it from streaming?
Okay. A long time ago. The only way you can really watch it is paying for it on Amazon. I found it. Somebody uploaded it to YouTube, so I watched the whole thing. And I'm not opposed to paying for the episodes. I don't want to pay for the episodes the first time through in case,
fair enough.
You know, it doesn't. Now at some point, I'm going to buy it so I can watch it on Amazon. I found it on YouTube. Somebody had uploaded every episode, and I'm just like, oh, my God. Oh, God. At the end of that series, I cried. Because there was going to be no more of that. Because it's funny, I hate sports. Sports Night is one of my favorite shows. I don't care about the drama that always happens in Hollywood, and you hear about the stories behind Saturday Night Live, and I don't care about any of that stuff. Honestly, I think a lot of these celebrities, they're whiners. But when Aaron Sorkin writes these things, I can't stand Jesse Eisenberg, but he was a hell of a thing to watch.
Yeah.
Deliver Sorkin's dialogue as Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network. I've only seen that movie once. I don't feel any need to watch it again because the guy drives me nuts because he's always playing Jesse Eisenberg. They just give him a different name. It's special when he's delivering Aaron Sorkin's dialogue. And, you know, they talk about on West Wing Weekly, they talk about these people that, you know, played in A Few Good Men in the stage plays. And I keep meaning to go back and watch that movie again because I saw that movie years ago, long before I ever knew who Aaron Sorkin was. I was a teenager. I watched it with my parents. My dad was in the Army growing up, so we watched a lot of military movies. So I saw that movie years ago, and I always mean to keep going back and watching that movie again with this new appreciation, but I never remember to do it. Same thing goes for The American President. I've never seen it.
I love that movie.
I've never seen it.
Like the West Wing prequel.
I know, and I should watch it, but I never think about it. It's terrible. I'm such a bad fan.
I feel like if I had seen it, I would absolutely know that I had seen it, and there would be no question. So therefore, I don't think I've seen it.
Yeah, it's a really good movie, and you should definitely watch it. I mean, to see Martin Sheen play the Chief of Staff.
Yeah,
is excellent. He's an excellent chief of staff, but just the interaction between him and Michael Douglas is so Leo Bartlett. It's ridiculous.
That must be trippy to see him play the chief of staff.
Well, that's why it's great because you have an out of body experience. You're like, wait, well, hold on.
An out of Bartlett experience. No, I'm sorry. I'll let myself out.
Yeah.
Nicely played.
Touche.
I'm just gonna go.
Well played, sir. Well, so what are you? Okay, I know there's a lot of fair weather fans of The West Wing that really only watch the first four seasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, I admit, season five, it is rocky as hell.
Mm-hmm.
The high points are high, the low points are low. And it takes a long time, even after the kidnapping thing, and an episode to episode, it sort of, it doesn't always gel. But I can't, the thing that bothers me the most about season five is that you could tell how much everybody involved in the show was trying to pull it all together and and carry on the magic. And you could tell that they were struggling to just keep it. And you know what? I consider the show and we as the viewers to be very lucky that it made it past season five, because for any other show,
that would
having
have been
such a rocky season would have meant it was the final season of it.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
I think there was just such a devoted fan following, and the people at NBC really liked it, that it's like they gave them a lifeline that tragically most shows that are great for a while and then fall off just never get.
Well, I think that when you have John Wells involved and he's had this ER success, that you get a little more leeway than anybody else would have ever gotten.
Was he? I think I've watched ER for a grand total of maybe across the entire season. Across the entire run of the show, I think I've maybe seen a season and a half's worth of episodes. But was he involved in all 94 seasons of that? And all 60 cast changes that it had? Yep. Okay.
Yeah, and he was the creator.
He was the creator with Crichton.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
For what it's worth, if you've never seen the episode of ER that Bradley Whitford was in,
I've definitely never seen that one.
Yeah, you know what? Fantastic. I didn't know about that.
What episodes of that I've seen, I don't ever remember seeing anybody from The West Wing on it. So I definitely haven't seen any of those.
That's a really good one. If you only see one episode of ER, see that one.
And you know,
I got excited. Like I said, last month I discovered that NCIS was finally on Netflix, so I could stop paying for fucking CBS. their stupid streaming. I was paying for it simply to watch NCIS, you bastards. And then Netflix put it on. But if they ever put ER on there, then I will watch that too. But I haven't watched the entire thing. But, I mean, that must have been a hell of a thing for John Wells to take over running the West Wing and be juggling ER at the same time. That kind of puts a little more perspective on the struggle that he had pulling season five together. But then season five ends with the horrible tragedy at the end of it that just blah. But after the Camp David bullshit at the beginning of season six, which I always watch and always get irritated by, because everybody in those episodes is playing somebody else. I consider that little block of episodes to be the Pod People version of The West Wing, where nobody is playing the characters that they were playing in the five seasons previous, and nobody is playing the characters that they'll eventually go back to playing after that's over with, because Bartlett's a supreme asshole in a way that he never had been before. And he's butting heads with everybody, and everybody in the cast is just they're putting these performances on that you can't even see a shred of the characters that they used to play. Toby isn't being Toby.
Oh.
Will isn't being Will. You know, it's Josh isn't Josh. Donna's not even Donna, for God's sake.
Yeah.
She's still in Germany.
That's a fair point. I didn't think of it that way.
When she comes back, well, that's true. She was injured, but even when she comes back, and because even after the Camp David, even after they leave Camp David, they go back to the White House. It still takes two episodes before anybody is playing their character. She gets out of the hospital, and even though she's injured,
yeah.
I can't help but feel like earlier West Wing Donna would have been closer to being Donna, yeah. even if she'd been injured. But mm-hmm. But then following that whole thing, season six picks back up, and it's on my list of favorite seasons because part of it I'm biased for.
You also get the injection though of Vinnick and Santos,
mm-hmm.
which are two great characters.
I love Jimmy Smith, and mm-hmm. I love Jimmy Smith. I'm biased. I was biased going into it once those seasons started on the Netflix discs because I've got an emotional tie to him because he played Bail Organa in the Star Wars prequels. when I was watching those episodes the first time, I'm like, ooh, Bail Organa's on this show. I had no idea that was coming. And then when Josh goes and he pleads with him to not leave Congress to run for re-election, and he's like, I'm not doing it. And then Josh has that talk with Leo where he asked him, well, when did you know that Bartlett was your guy? And Leo's like, oh, so, you know, you found your guy. And you know, he goes and he talks him into running for president. At that point, season six, for me, never has another down in the depths episode. Like it's a roller coaster ride as the campaign gets off to.
They refound their stride.
They did. All of a sudden, it felt like the West Wing was back to being the West Wing that it was.
Mm-hmm. And ironically, I think they did it by stopping trying to be what the West Wing was with Sorkin mm-hmm. and taking right. it their own new direction.
Yeah.
You know what? I think you're right. And it's at that point that it's no longer apparent that Aaron Sorkin's not on the show anymore.
One interesting point about that personally, when I was a kid, my parents would always watch NYPD Blue. And I loved that show. And I love.
My parents watched it. They wouldn't let me watch it. I was a teenager. I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Well, I was like 10 and watching that show.
My parents sheltered the shit out of us, so yeah, I blame them.
But the other thing is that growing up, I would wake up every morning to go to school, and my dad would be in the kitchen watching MASH, and I fucking hated that show.
I hated it too growing up, and now as an adult, I love it.
Exactly. Until it just kept every morning. It was just, and then after a while, it was like, yeah, all right, this is fine. Okay, all right, I like it. And that's obviously where I was introduced to Alan Alda. And when they put two of my favorite actors from, you know, when I was young into my favorite show, it was like, you know, it was just the best. So to me, that was, I mean, I always appreciated seasons 6 and 7 way more than I think most people did, but it was for that reason.
No, I did too. I'm biased for them. Like I said, I got excited that Bail Organa was gonna be on the show. And then he was running for chancellor, not president, chancellor. But then they put Alan Alda, and they threw him in one of the best scenes of the show,
mm-hmm.
where Josh goes to talk to him, and he's shining his shoes, and it's such a little thing, but it meant so much, because that's when you realize, wow, the world really just has gone to shit, because nobody does shine their shoes anymore.
Yeah, and he gives Josh endless amounts of shit, because Josh's shoes look terrible. Yeah.
They're scuffed.
He makes Josh shine his own shoes.
Right.
Yeah.
He tells him, while we're talking anyways, pick up a brush and shine those things. You wear those out of the house?
Mm-hmm.
But when he comes on and then he delivers the line, and when Josh says something about, getting the job for the administration, and then he delivers the line that he says, the president can't give me the job.
Yeah, that I want. Yeah.
And then Josh, which one? He's like his. And and when he says that, I cheer every time. I'm like, oh my God, we're gonna see Alan Alda run for president.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the real world, he doesn't. And God damn it, why not? but see, that's where I've got a huge conflict of interest, because all along I'm watching Jimmy Smits as Matt Santos playing this part, and I'm cheering him on because he's Jimmy Smits, and because Josh is the campaign manager. But I know that they initially toyed with the idea of having Vinnick win, and that's where my giant conflict comes in, because I'm just like, I kind of wanted Vinnick to win, not because I wanted Santos to lose, but just because I really think that it would have been a twist on the show that almost, I almost think that they might have been able to keep going. Yes, they may have given it another season, just because it would have been nice to have seen the creators of the show now take on a presidency that is now on the other side of the aisle, and all of the stuff that would come with that, and knowing full well that some of the characters that were outgoing because Bartlett's administration was ending, that I almost would have liked to have seen if they might have been able to keep some of the characters on in as part of the administration. Obviously, they wouldn't have been senior staff, but they could have been recurring characters as something else. Like, if we had gotten to see Will Bailey run for Congress, that would have been great.
Josh wasn't going to leave politics. You know, he could have become the advisor to, like, you know, somebody high up in the House or something.
Yeah, he wasn't leaving politics, and Charlie was clearly going to go on to do something in the political realm, and they could have kept Annabeth on. There's no reason why a lot of those characters wouldn't have, because when Santos makes the plea to CJ to stick around for institutional memory, I can totally see Vinnick giving her the same thing, and that maybe even Danny Kincannon would have said, you know what, go with it. This is a brand new administration, a new party, and they need somebody who's got your experience. And it would have been so cool to see such a dramatic shift, but it just sucks that we never got to. And then on top of that, it sucks that we never actually got to see the Santos administration in action. Yeah.
Well, the couple of points about that is, first of all, they bit themselves in the ass by giving themselves a timeline, first of all.
Yep.
There's no reason they needed to. Second of all, this is something that I would have regular conversations with my father about, is that there were so many possibilities. If you look at the character that Donna grew into in those last two seasons when she left. How they could have been a power couple, you know, going around, you know, getting this person elected or you know, running this firm doing X, Y, or Z.
Consulting,
yeah. Whatever.
Those two could have been dynamite lobbyists.
Oh, yeah.
If Vinnick had been the president and they could have been lobbyists, that would have been absolutely spectacular to watch. You're right. They would have been a power couple.
Yeah.
They would have been amazing.
The amount of potential in the main cast going, separately into, Series A or Series B, whatever, of, be it Josh or Will running for Congress or Josh and Donna or Charlie, starting a law firm or whatever is exponential. One of the things that really hit me a few weeks ago when I got to the MS storyline was how great Oliver Platt was as Babish, and I wish that they would have done more with him or given him a spinoff, something like that. Because
what if Charlie?
Yeah.
What if Charlie had been?
Hello. I'm losing him.
Hello.
Yeah, I he's cutting out on me too.
Okay. Can you hear us?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I can hear you. Hang on a second.
Oh,
hang
there
on.
We go.
There
That's
we go.
Better.
That's better.
Yeah, sorry. I moved. I walked. Yeah, I shouldn't do that. what if we'd seen that, and what if Charlie had been in the council's office?
Yeah.
And then we could have seen him play Oliver Babish, basically.
Yep.
And it was nice there at the end to see Sam Seaborn come back. But every time I watch those episodes, I just think we knew he was going to lose the California 47th, but they dropped it after that. They never we never even saw. Like
there
the news reports on TV, we never saw the election results or whatever, and they just sort of. So it was nice to see him come back, but even when they bring him back, they still never mention it. Like they never talk about when he actually went back to Gage Whitney, which is funny because he leaves again. I wish that they could have gotten one more season out of it because a lot of season seven. Some episodes, you don't even see the Oval Office or the staff at the White House. And then some episodes, you don't see the campaign at all because it's all in the White House. And it would have been cool if season eight had been just that. You see some of the Santos administration in the White House, and then some of it is following these other characters in whatever other jobs that they got. Because, I don't... CJ left politics, but they could have found a way to keep her. Mm-hmm.
She was in that foundation, so they could have found a way to like make that foundation part of something.
How she's working with the administration.
Yeah, she could have been lobbying to get more funds. Yeah.
She didn't need more funds. I mean, the guy gave her $10 billion. So, I mean, she really didn't need a lot of money. But it could have been her like sponsoring something in Africa that has something to do with something that they're trying to do or
coming to the administration for help working out a deal with whomever, wherever to get a road built.
She could have renewed the fight for the Wolves Only Highway.
She had the money.
She could have called it the Pluey Project, but
Pluey.
If nothing else, we could have had more instances of Alice and Janney just all of a sudden cracking the hell up, because I'll tell you what, no actor in the world can crack up like she can.
No,
no,
it's a thing to behold.
When Marion Cotesworth Hayes, when she busts out and Amy's like, oh God. And she goes off in the corner and she's talking about the budget thing that just happened. But she goes, she does that multiple times. Like, she does it with the Pluey thing, and she does it. Nobody does it quite like she does.
No, it's nobody like, does.
No,
I could watch a 5-minute scene of her just cracking up and everybody trying to bring her back, and trying to ground her again, because that is comedy gold.
Physical comedy she can do. I mean, you know, the fall into the pool, the fall on the treadmill. I mean, she's just amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? My introduction to Alice and Janney, and this was, again, years before I ever watched The West Wing, and this is going to be goofy as shit. Prepare yourselves. The first time I ever saw her in a movie was 10 Things I Hate About You.
I was really hoping that's what you were going to say.
Yeah. She was the principal. Yeah, lady.
And she was like
writing. She's the school principal that's writing the erotica story in her office.
Yes.
And that is the funniest. And, you know, when she first meets Cameron and she's talking about the miserable little shit for brains that go to the school. And then she calls the secretary and she's like, what's another word for engorged? Yeah. And her secretary's just like, I'll look it up. You know, she obviously, the secretary has absolutely no idea what she's doing. But
that
was my introduction to Alice and Janney. And ever since then, I've seen that movie probably 50 times, because it's the most unteenage movie ever. But I've seen her in so many things since, and she's glorious no matter what. But that's funny that's actually the movie that you were hoping I was gonna.
It really was.
She's just magical, and it just sucks that because she was great as the chief of staff. And I'm not even going to question the logic of that jump, because, you know, I've seen people say that it never would have worked. I've seen people that argued that it easily could have. And even though in the chief of staff role, she couldn't goof around like she could as the press secretary, she was so dynamite to watch play that role, even when it got to be so heavy that it seemed like in the episodes on the plane and while they're in China and you know, the MS creeps up and, you know, she can't let loose because there's no opportunity to.
Mm-hmm.
You still see cracks of the CJ that she used to be. And it's so awesome to watch. And then when Danny comes back in the 7th season, it's like, oh my God, just get it on already. Like, just, just get together. You know, it's like, oh my God, just find
out they can.
You know, when he shows up in the Santa suit in you know, in season 3, I mean, it's great. I'm a little bit reluctant to talk about the Toby thing again, because I've seen the theories that they thought, there's people that say they think that CJ was the leak, and I don't think so. I honest to God, I was watching Things Fall Apart again the other day, and when that whoever the hell he is comes in and he mentions the civilian shuttle, in my opinion, it seems to me like right then that guy was the leak. Like they made a big story out of something that didn't need. They could have just attributed it to this guy opening his big fat mouth,
right?
All of a sudden, because it stopped CJ. She's like, "Wait, civilian? What?" Because that to me, when they did that storyline, never mind the betrayal of Toby's character that it was, but they didn't need to make any more hay out of it than that right there. They could have blamed it on that guy, and then instead we see this fallout where Greg Brock goes to jail for it.
Yep.
And then you know, Andy's bothering about, oh, just tell him it was your brother that said it. Yeah. It's like they made a giant story out of something that just didn't need to be.
Had this theory about the leak that the actual leak came from Andy, and I thought that Toby was covering for her.
Hmm.
Because he got the information from Toby's brother before he died.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I thought that he was still, after everything, so in love with Andy that he covered up for her.
Oh, wow. You know what? Boy, I've never thought about that before. That has never
occurred to me before. That's a good theory, actually.
That really is, because, see, I never liked the idea that CJ was the leak, only because how would CJ have possibly known that? Despite being the chief of staff and despite having the security clearance, that was not
need to
something
know.
That would have come up in her.
Yeah, it wasn't on her radar.
Right.
So that's a really good theory. But you know what? That fits Andy's character perfectly. Mm-hmm. Because what happened when she got reelected to Congress?
She was pushing for a fight and trying to get sued.
Actually fits her character beautifully,
you know,
because she would have done that. And you're right, Toby was just that in love with her that there was nothing that he would not have done for her.
You know what's interesting to me is, if I think about this, I feel like, and I don't know why, and it's not a misogynistic thing, I swear, but I feel like part of me says that is information that Leo would have had. But it's not information that CJ as chief of staff would have.
Well, yeah, because there's a precedent for it. Because when they find out about the leak with John Hoynes, and then they talk about, when Leo says you're right. He did. He had knowledge of the space thing. I'm having a brain fart on exactly what he said, but. You're right. He did. That was in his wheelhouse, but mm-hmm. there's no reason why it would have been in CJ's wheelhouse. And I think it was more just because all the way through the series, you get the sense that Leo has been in politics for so long that there's nothing that he doesn't know something about.
Yeah, but it wasn't even that. I mean, even Greg Brock talks about it in one of the episodes I saw yesterday, I think it was. Where, you know, we're talking about the virtual co-president.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Leo was always a little bit more than CJ as far as, yes, they were both chief of staff, but Leo was always just a little bit more than chief of staff.
You know what? To be fair, Leo, even though he was the chief of staff, he was more the vice president than Hoynes ever was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, and even more than Bob Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely more than Bob Russell.
Yeah. You know,
Gary Cole is a great actor.
Fantastic.
And I can't help but feel like all along, like long before the campaign trail to become the president, that Gary Cole was completely wasted in that role. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so much so that they call him Bingo Bob and they make a lot of jokes. But one, they never explained what the hell Bingo Bob actually meant. And two, even when he joined the administration, he was only there, like, maybe a scene here or there. He's a character that they never seem to know what the hell to do with.
What I found was interesting with him is that it felt like literally, and I noticed this yesterday, actually. Or it was either yesterday or today. I don't remember when exactly I watched the episode. I think it was yesterday. But it felt like the entire storyline of having to pick him, nominating him, getting him confirmed, and everything, all boiled down to the situation room where they find out that Israel has the bomb.
Yeah.
And, like, that entire storyline's payoff was the fact that he was on a Codel to, you know, wherever they said they were, and he happened to be on a ship with an Israeli diplomat who said, I hope she's not puking on one of our nuclear subs. And I'm like, really? Like, one line, you know, was the entirety of this? That's ridiculous.
He's a character that just, it's like, well, because I thought it was cool the first time watching. I'm like, oh, Gary Cole, cool. We're going to see, well, my first thought was, oh, finally, we're going to see a decent vice president that wasn't as maddening as Hoynes was. I mean, so much so that Bartlett offers him up as a sacrifice in two cathedrals. You know, mm-hmm. You get Hoynes. Yeah. It's like I thought, well, they're getting Gary Cole, and, you know, he's always, you know, he's a good actor. You know, he can play a villain, but he can also play Mike Brady beautifully. but he just, I thought, you know, here's an actor with gravitas, and they're going to, but then he completely wasted him. Mm-hmm. And then even once, the campaign started and he's running for president, they still never gave him any sort of substance. There was nothing to chew on there. Mm-hmm. He was just, it's like he was just there to be Santos's his opponent. And they wasted him completely. Like, it was like, he could have been so much more than he was. But I think part of that is because Leo was so much like the stand-in vice president that mm-hmm. It's almost like, yeah. You know what? If Hoynes had left and then they just made an offhanded remark later that somebody got appointed as the vice president, but they never show him or never use him, I think that would have worked just as well. Mm-hmm. Because even up to that point, Hoynes was only in like every five episodes.
Yeah.
So, and when he did show up, he had about as much screen time as Gary Cole got, where it was just, you know, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, a couple lines of dialogue. And yeah, it's like they make this huge story arc out of getting a new vice president only to not utilize it.
Piss it away, basically.
Yeah.
Gary Cole for a brief second, Gary Cole was in, I think the fifth season of Archer, he played a guy.
I just started watching that show. I just started season two.
Funniest show to ever hit the airwaves. I know I make the ever hit the
wrongest
airwaves
show
comment.
To ever hit the airwaves. My God, that show makes South Park look tame.
It does. But he plays a character who is a FBI agent who actually is a CIA agent, and he is hysterical.
What the hell?
Absolutely hysterical. Once you get into it, you'll understand. But that show,
it's a good show.
Absolutely.
And then your dog Christian Slater plays a CIA agent too, which is actually,
yeah, he plays, yeah, funny. Yeah. Yeah, he plays a CIA agent named Slater. It's a mononym. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's a fantastic show. It's like the only way I can describe it is like if Family Guy met James Bond.
Basically.
Yeah. If you haven't watched it, watch it. What's next?
I think for me the Toby thing was more of a way, and I hate saying this because I really don't want it to be true, but it seems like it was. The whole thing of having Toby be the leak and having him have to leave the White House was a plot device to get Will back in.
But even then...
And it really sucked that that was the only way they could figure out how to get Will back into the White House.
Well, and you know what? Here's the thing. Now, again, watching this show, I was already a fan of Sports Night, where Jeremy Goodwin was...
Jeremy's the main character.
Yeah, he's the straight man to everybody else's insanity on that show. And so I was, again, I'm getting the discs from Netflix, and I see that Josh Molina is now going to be on the West Wing, and I was so excited. And they set him up, and, you know, when Sam writes that note to Toby that says he's one of us, And on inauguration night, they offer him the position as the deputy chief, communications director and whatever. And they set it up, and it's so nice, and it's so wonderful. And then when him and Toby are writing that speech,
oh my gosh,
for Russell, and they're talking about the mediocrity. And
a champion, or what does he say? Something of middling. Anyway, go on. Yes.
And then you know, they leave it in the speech, and you know, it's funny, and it's like he had such a great setup, and then they get Russell in there as the vice president, don't know what to do with him. And then it's like all of a sudden they didn't know what to do with Will either. So they make him the vice president's chief of staff, which he was not. That was completely out of character, because he was brought in to be on the communications staff for the Oval Office. So what the hell was he doing as the – and not that I'm saying that Will wouldn't have been more than capable of doing that. They just – it's like that was a disservice to the character. And then you're right. The leak thing with Toby, you're right. It's like they wanted to get him back into the White House. And I think there could have been – he should have stayed with – as Toby's right-hand man – and they should have left it the way it was, because it was so magical, his first few appearances. And then it's like he starts working for Russell, and all of a sudden he's just kind of a dick, and he never was before that.
Well, one interesting point is the fact that when Russell offers him the job, he offers him the communications director position, his communications director. And then they don't say anything about it, but by the time he is then dragooned, as CJ puts it.
I love that word, by the way.
To be the White House communications director, he was the chief of staff to Russell.
That's funny, because that was such a subtle plot point.
And that – it would have
even
been,
I just said he was his chief of staff, because it's completely overlooked. I forgot. You're right. He was hired to be the speechwriter.
One of those things.
And then,
go on, sir.
Oh no, I was going to say you're right. They hired him for the community, and then you're right. All of a sudden, he's
the chief.
He's an advisor, and it's like what? Where'd that come
and
from?
It's one of those things where it would have been so easy to just put in a throwaway line. Hey, congratulations on your promotion. You know, and it obviously wouldn't come from Toby, but it could come from the president. It could come from Leo, CJ, Josh. It could have come from one of the assistants. It doesn't matter. You know,
yeah, let Ginger say it, damn it.
Ginger. Or even it would have been perfectly acceptable for Donna to say it. Hey, congratulations on your promotion.
Or Kate,
blah, blah, blah.
Or, I mean.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. There's so many. You know, while he was screwing Kate. Hey, by the way. No.
Well, you know what's funny about that is up until that point, I didn't dislike Kate Harper. I didn't care about her at all. She was just there. And then it's like she makes a comment about, you know, they're ending on a Saturday night, and she says, you know, what's sad is that this didn't affect my plans one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And but she was never, she never had much dimension to her.
Right.
Until that, you know, until that formal where she's talking to Will, and then they start flirting, and then all of a sudden it's like they gave her just a little bit of depth there that she didn't have before, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden I'm like, wait. It took flirting with Will to make her interesting? What the hell?
Yeah, to me, right. To me, she was, and I'm actually just now realizing this as I'm watching her entrance again. To me, before that, she's Mallory 2.0. like oh. No joke.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't know, like
boy, I never thought about that.
It's
before.
Just like. She's almost curt and dismissive of things, and it's not exactly Mallory, but it's Mallory like in a, I don't know how to describe it, but I'm sitting there and I'm like, no, well,
you don't need to, because you know what? I think we all know exactly where you're coming from.
Fair point. Yeah. But yeah. But you're exactly right. Until that thing, whatever it was going or whatever it was going to become, kind of starts with Will, it's that's what it's like to me. You know, and then once they finally, as you said, give her that depth and let her go with it, you're like, all right, fine.
Well, it's funny because she starts out, you know, they call her Commander because, you know, she was in the Navy and, you know, she had the high security clearance and like in No Exit. What's that? Her second episode, I think. And,
yeah.
You know, she's talking about how she's been in the situation before. And you know, Josh asks, well, how do you know? And she's like, you know, the security clearance for it. And you get the feeling that. That she is, that there is going to be a lot of dimension to her. And then, yeah. And then for the longest time after that, it's like she just sort of flounders there. She's just, it's like they didn't, again, they didn't know what to do with her. And,
right.
And, but, yeah.
Well, also, in that sense, like in that episode, it's like you can pull rank and not be a bitch about it. You know? She's just like, you know, she's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, she could say, I can't talk about it. You know, and Josh is going to be Josh. Oh, well, I have code word. Understand. It's, you know, it's need to know. It's whatever. There's 1,000 throwaway lines that could have been put there.
Yeah, but, I would say he should have mentioned that they once gave him the card for the
NSA
card.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like, I mean, they did finally evolve her character, but it was just like, and I get she's supposed to be a veteran and, you know, have seen some things in her life that maybe, you know, desensitized her and so on. But I think it was too wooden, if you will, at the beginning.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, you know what? I know a lot of people. I know that 90 Miles Away gets a shitload of criticism, but the first few times I watched it, I don't think I really appreciated it. And then last month when I watched it, I sort of realized just how nice the intricate story there was.
Mm-hmm.
And when they show her in that flashback when she's helping the ridiculously drunk Leo to the car, and it just seemed to me like, you know, because a lot of times you see in shows where they do things like that and it's retcon and sometimes it feels forced, but that particular thing never did to me. It seemed like it fit perfectly that Leo wouldn't have remembered her and she would have helped him and never said anything because that's, you know, she was basically a spy. I mean, that's what they do. They do these things and they never mention it. But that episode was a bit annoying. simply because of how real it sort of pulls you out of it, because it's not fictional. It's mm-hmm. it's set in the real world, which kind of drove me nuts. But yeah. that scene worked for me. But you're right. It's like it takes that kind of stuff to make her seem less wooden, or mm-hmm. you know, she's yeah, because yeah, up until that point, I guess she is just sort of a yeah, cardboard she's like Sandy. She's like the, yeah, exactly. thank you. You took the words right out of my mouth. She's like the movie theater display for the next blockbuster.
Yeah.
But
you're right. You're right, because even when she tried to like talk to Donna about her injuries, and you know, does she want to talk to somebody, and that whole scene was just so awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And she jokes about how it's awkward, and it still falls flat because you're like, oh my god, yes, it really is awkward.
Yeah, it really is. Although, you know what was funny? That scene where Charlie talks about the guy at the gym that asked if she was seeing anybody, and he suddenly realizes that he took the initial inquiry completely wrong. That was funny as hell, because I'm just like, that's a mistake that anybody would have made, and anybody would have made the mistake of assuming that the guy that Charlie's talking about was asking for a date. And right. anybody that's human would have taken it the way Charlie initially did. And that yeah. works so well. And then you're right. She goes back to being just a nothing character.
I'm going to use that as a segue to ask this question real quick. What is to you guys the funniest scene in the series?
Oh god damn!
In the whole show?
Whole show.
Oh god damn!
Oh.
Do you realize?
Because I know what I know what I think mine is.
Okay, well, tell us yours.
Mine is Babish with the dictaphone and the and
the big hammer.
Yeah,
the big hammer.
Because Bartlett's just being coy, you know, and he's saying what he's saying, but he's being coy about it. And it's just, yeah. it's impossible not to sit there with a stupid grin on your face. Cause you're like, you know, I want you to tell me whether I've engaged 17 people into committing a, you know, whatever, and yeah. you know, covering it up and blah 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 blah.
It was funny before that because he had already made a joke about it won't stop recording.
Right, and that's exactly what you want in the White House counsel's office.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Okay, so in the interest again of not repeating answers, I'm gonna go with CJ confronting Josh about getting on the internet forums.
Oh yeah. LemonLyman.com.
So far Lemon up your Lyman. Ass.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so far up your ass.
Yeah. I got Ricky. That's a good one too. I like the scene when they sit down to poker and Debbie's there and Bartlett has to get up and leave. And he tells Will, after he finds out that Will's in the Air Force Reserve, to sit yeah. down. And Will sits down and shuffles the cards, and they're all like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what? That was you know what? I'll just mention, you know what? I liked in that scene that we found that out about Will, because that gave him another dimension, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
But
that, and I love Will. The look that he gets from Debbie. When mm-hmm. you start, because she's been like hustling everybody the
she's
whole
been hustling
night.
Everybody. She's like, oh shit, now somebody that's better than me. Damn it.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back to my alpacas.
Yeah. That to me, that scene was awesome.
God, the very funniest scene. Oh shit. Now, see, I let all of you go first so I had time to think, and I was still. I'm. You know
you
what?
I think Rogered, but good.
I really did. You screwed me with my pants on. I'm going to go with... God damn it. Well, shit. Because there's so many possibilities. Okay.
Oh, so many.
You know what? I'm going to go with... When Helen Santo, you know what? Okay. She was good as Terry Polo. She was good as Rebecca on Sports Night, but she's so funny as Matt Santos' wife because she'll make jokes that it's like nobody else could have. And I was just watching, and again, it's things fall apart when she makes a joke about how fear of death is why the old people never sleep. But before that, she makes when Josh is like, "I'm giving you the they're offering you the opportunity to the second most powerful job in the world," and she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about the vice president." Translation: what the hell does the vice president do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but all the way through that episode, and the episode where. She's talking to, where she says to Matt, "You're not actually thinking about, oh my God, you're actually considering this." She, without ever, no, I take that back, scratch that. That scene where they're on the plane and they're watching the movie and she's talking and it's got nothing to do with what Matt's, and that's it. I lose it.
That's fantastic.
I'd lose it every time because the things he's saying and her responses sound like they're to what he's saying, but then you find out she's talking to the damn movie the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
That that's it. That one for of me the... is funny. That or the thing where the things keep falling off Amy Gardner's wall because that's fucking hilarious. But again, that's completely overshadowed by CJ cracking up at Marion Coatsworth Hayes and Marble Head. Not Marion Coatsworth Hayes.
It's a hell of an impression, too.
Yeah, I know. You know what? I can do an impression of Jar Jar Binks, too, so I'm
please
not sure
don't.
That we're... you know what? Now you've challenged me, and I think I want to, just to annoy my dedicated listening audience. All right, I have to. What yet? Thinking and here, monsters out there, all thinking and no power? What are you thinking with in trouble? There you go. There you go. Yep,
well,
I did it.
It was nice knowing you guys. That was pretty good. I'll give you that. Good impression. Terrible movie, terrible character. But whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
I know. But I, you know what? Yeah, Helen Santos... she was so funny. And then again, later when she talks about losing the prom date to her friend.
I was
and
just
then,
about to say.
And then,
oh my God.
And then he says, well, but you get to be the first lady. Hey, guess what? You win.
Yeah.
You without,
She's funny without – with and it always feels completely natural. Mm-hmm. They didn't write anything for her that seemed ridiculous. She's funny without – making a big deal of it, and yeah, she's got most of the in season 6 and 7. Yeah, she's got most of the funniest lines.
I have to make a confession regarding first ladies.
You had a thing for George Bush's wife, didn't
right?
You sick bastard.
Lara Bush killed a guy. Thank you, Family Guy. All right, there is a point. I was never overly fond of Abby's character, period. Okay. But after the kidnapping, she becomes just detestable to me. And I get that they're trying to say it's her coping mechanism and whatever. I can't handle her. She's obnoxious. She's arrogant. And, even so much as, and I understand where they were going with it and why they did it with her storming into the press room, in catatonia. That's not a place, it's a thing. but she, storming into the press room, they pull her out of the press room. But like basically from then on out, or for that section of the series until I guess really season six, she just becomes just arrogant and I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want, and with no expectation of recourse. It's ridiculous, and I hate that they wrote that.
You know, it's funny because when I started watching, now see, I'm a giant nerd for Grease, okay? So when I started watching this show, and she comes in the first time, and we realize that Rizzo is the first lady for like
when you put it like that.
It's funny because the first couple seasons she's on, I couldn't see, like, I'm like,
you couldn't see past
she's Abby
Rizzo.
Bartlett, but she is. She's Rizzo. Okay. So, like, she all she needed was the pink jacket. Okay. But, so, and then it's funny because daughter takes a dance class, and in that class, they're dancing to that last song in Greece, you know.
And, the one that
and
I want.
So, yeah. So they're doing a dance to that. And so last week, the dance teacher gives them homework to go home and watch Grease. And so I was excited because, like I said, I'm a huge geek for that. So, and it was my introduction to musical theater. So, you know, I love it. So I even told the teacher, I'm like, oh, gee, she has to watch that. Oh, good. I think we'll go home and do that. So, oh, darn. But now it was the first time in probably 4 or 5 years I've actually sat down and watched it. And for the first time ever, I'm watching Rizzo thinking, hey, that's Abby Bartlett. I'm like, oh, wow, that's quite a reversal. Because now I think I've seen The West Wing through as many times as I once saw Grease. So I'm like, now we flip the coin altogether.
There's the next question. There's the next question. How many times has everyone watched the episode or the series through?
Oof.
Oh.
Dude, I don't even know if I could count it because even when I'm doing a rewatch, there are the times when I'll sit down and I'll watch all the way from season one to all the way through season seven. But then there's times where I'll do a partial rewatch where I'll be well into a season, and then I'll start thinking about some of the best things about the later season, and I'll switch. Altogether, I think I've probably seen the whole series, every episode, minus the ones that I skip all the time, is probably 6 or 7. But there's some of the episodes that I've probably seen 30. There's story arcs that I'll watch. Sometimes I'll decide, oh, I'm going to watch the MS arc, or I'm going to watch the campaign for Matt Santos, i.e., pretty much watching the last two seasons. Or I'll decide that I'm going to watch Will's campaign to get the dead guy elected. Followed through Sam's abrupt career change, you know. But, yeah, all the way through, I think I've probably seen the whole series 6 or 7 times. Maybe 8 or 9. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think I've seen it way more than that. And I just got the discs from Amazon when they went on sale a couple of weeks ago.
You know what? I swear to God, it's going to be a dark day on this planet if Netflix ever decides to pull The West Wing. I will cancel my membership. Well, as long as NCIS is, as long as I watched it a few times through, then I'll cancel my membership. Well, but
a couple of things. First of all, I actually have 2 copies on DVD of the series. I have the box set and I have the individuals.
I'm going to be a geek and ask you, is there any difference between the two?
Yeah, but I want to know what it is. I believe that the startings for season 2 and 3,
mm-hmm.
just the title sequence are different. Because
what the hell? What's different?
they're like full screen, but in a box. It's really weird.
What the hell?
It's really weird. Huh. And I think that's on the... It's on one... I can't remember what it is. But I've been asking Warner Brothers, because I'm this bad. I asked Warner Brothers like 5 years ago. I had a contact at Warner Brothers. I think I asked her if they were ever going to release on Blu-ray, because that's what I really want. I want
my laser discs.
And
I
want Blu-ray and I want digital. Or if I have Blu-ray, I can rip them with my computer. I don't care. But the one gripe I have with Netflix's streaming is that they recently re-encoded all of their video, which, and you can see parts of the series where it's just choppy and it drives me fucking nuts.
Wait, what? Hang on. You're gonna have to explain, only because you know what? I've seen the episode so many times through. Sometimes I'm not watching it. Sometimes I'm listening to it because I know it well enough that and the dialogue truly drives the show.
Right.
So sometimes
course.
I'm not watching it. So I'm honest to God, I have no idea what you mean.
So Netflix, I think 8 months or a year ago, announced they were re-encoding all of their video, basically taking the masters and re-ripping the video at what's called variable bitrate, which just means that where parts of something aren't very visually challenging, it will dumb down what's captured from it to save space, right?
Is that why the resolution is wonky sometimes?
Exactly.
Yep.
That's exactly what I'm talking
That's
about.
Why there's so many, because sometimes you'll start an episode and it'll be like 2 minutes until it's
no,
not all
that's different.
Fuzzy anymore.
That's different. Oh. That's a connection thing. That's an internet connection thing. No, there's parts, and it's hard to describe, and it's one of those things that once you notice it, you're fucked. But if you don't notice it, you probably, like, unless someone points it out or there's just a really obnoxious representation of it, you're not going to.
Yeah, it's
now
definitely
you're
going
to look for it,
that,
so you're screwed.
I would have to be watching it, and somebody would have to point it out to me, because I'm really just baffled.
Yeah, but that's my only gripe, is that there are certain parts, and I notice it in every single episode, where things are just slightly too choppy, like the frame rate is low. I'm sorry, I said variable bit rate. It's variable frame rate.
And I'm glad you made that distinction, because now I really
well,
have no idea. But then I'm confused by when they announced that The Hobbit was going to be 48 frames per second.
Yeah.
I'm like,
and people went fucking ballistic over it. Yeah,
like, what the fuck does that even mean?
Just one of the many many things we offer in Claudia's House of Useless Knowledge.
Well played, sir.
There, guys.
But that's me being a picky bitch, which is fine, because I am. I think there was something else I was going to say, but, you know, shocker, I forgot it.
No, I have the single series 1 through 4, and then I went and bought the master set when it was on Amazon a couple weeks ago for like a ridiculously low rate.
Mm-hmm.
But I have digital copies.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, so more than a couple, 8 or 9 years ago, I was in Europe for a few months, and I met this guy who, let's just say, uploads TV shows for you. And we're just going to leave it there. And he found out I was a West Wing nut, so he gave me all 7 seasons.
Nice.
In digital form. Now, okay, some of them have, like, you know, ads at the end, like BBC mm-hmm. ads or, you know, whatever. But, okay, you still have the digital version, so you get to watch them without streaming, which is awesome.
Right.
So I've pretty much worn those files out, I think. The reason I got the discs was, you know, just in case, you know, something ever happens to those files, obviously.
Best part about the master set that I have, is that I didn't buy it. I had an ex-girlfriend like 10 years ago buy it for me.
Nice. She was worth dating just for that.
Yeah, there was really only one other good thing about it, but whatever.
I'm pretty sure you don't have to spell that one out.
No, we're good. We're good.
To be honest, I never thought about buying it because it was so expensive.
Yeah.
But it was like, I think it was like a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
On the old Facebook page, somebody posted it, and Amazon had it for like 48 hours. It was $52.
Nice.
Jeez.
And I was like, oh, hell yeah. I will probably never open it, but yes, I am definitely buying it.
Well, you know, if you've never, like, if you didn't open it, if you haven't seen it, basically, there is a copy of the script for the pilot in it.
Sweet.
And then
yeah.
Maybe
I will open it now.
And then the seasons are broken up into file folders.
Really?
And they say, you know, they've got the seal of the president. I think they say confidential or top secret, something like that.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
I'm trying to think of where my set is. I pretty much wore my set out because, again,
I'm looking at mine right now.
Because I've watched the show. I'm on run number 13, as a completionist. So,
wow.
Yeah, mine is, you know, I think I've got a couple of discs in mine that are questionable. At best at this point.
Yeah, and I think for that type of viewing, I will always use the digital files. I don't think I will try to wear out the discs.
Oh, yeah. There's no reason. My thing about it, I probably wouldn't have bought that set, not because I didn't want it, but because I already had them. But when someone's buying it for you, fuck it.
Hey, it's rude to turn down a gift, you know?
Of course.
Well, it's funny because, see, I'm so happy about the Netflix thing. I don't own the discs, but that's because, I don't own the discs to a lot of the stuff. But I'm so happy about the Netflix thing because I can sit at my desk at work and, you know, basically I can take the West Wing and NCIS with me to work, because I can just sit there, stream it on my phone and, you know, listen to it while I work or look busy. So,
right.
That's why I said, I swear to God, it'll be a dark day if Netflix ever decides that, oh, well, we don't need to show the West Wing. Well, oh, fuck you, Netflix.
Mm-hmm. If that happens, I'll share my digital files with you.
Well, that would be dynamite because, I've never seen all of Psych. I've seen the first few seasons, but I don't envy the people that were watching Psych in September, and then I read enraged posts on Reddit and Facebook where basically people said that they pulled Psych down, and people weren't near done with watching it. I'm like, oh, that sucks. And then I thought, swear to God, they ever do that to West Wing?
You know, at least with Hulu, you have them. They'll say you have X amount of time to finish watching this episode before it's no longer available. Netflix really needs to implement something like that because they're gonna piss people, or they are pissing people off. I mean, they pulled Doctor Who, and I'm a huge Whovian, but they pulled Doctor Who. And I think the only ones that have it now is Amazon Prime. But
yeah, but they don't have everything.
They don't have everything. Yeah, mm-hmm. which is bullshit.
No, tell us how you really feel. Do not hold back.
No, I'm good. Maybe. I'm good.
Well, folks, this is epic. Shit. Yeah, I'm gonna for the sake of my web host, I should probably, you know, I don't want to, by the way. There's gonna be a part two to this because it turns out when I asked in the Facebook group West Wing Wing Nuts, if anybody would want to step up and sort of do a retrospective episode of General Geekery, I underestimated how many people would actually respond to that, because I figured, and I mentioned it on my last episode of the show, and I told my co-host, I said, I'm going to hijack the podcast for an episode so that we can talk to some other West Wing fans about the show. And then I thought, yeah, it'll be an episode. And well, turns out there's going to be at least one more of these, possibly two, because I had a bunch of people step up. I'm like, well, shit, how many people can I get on the call safely and let Skype cooperate? I'm going to have to cut it off there. But now this is the point of the show where we give all of our guests a chance to toot their own horns, plug anything and everything that you're working on. If you have another show, if you write an online comic book, if you have a blog, just talk about everything that you're doing. Natalie, we'll start with you.
Okay, so I am in the planning stages. I have a friend who has actually never seen The West Wing. And she and I have been talking about doing a podcast, which I know there's other ones out there, but with her as a first-time viewer and not being allowed to see spoilers. So we're hoping to get that up and running in the next few months.
You know what? I know you say there's other ones out there, but in my opinion, there is no such thing as too many podcasts about one individual thing, as long as each show has its own unique format and its own unique voice on the thing. Yes. Like, I mean, look, I love Star Wars. There's a billion Star Wars podcasts. I only listen to a handful of them, but that's simply because those are the ones where the hosts work for me and the individual, whatever their little gimmick is it gels with me. So I know there's a bunch of West Wing podcasts, but there's a reason for that. You know, the show is great. And
there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, look at this shit. I mean, we just scratched the surface. There's a giant ass iceberg underneath us.
So we're in the planning stages for that. We're hoping to get things up and running in the next few months. So we'll see how that goes.
That is cool, though. So are you going to watch it episode by episode with her?
Yeah, that's the game plan.
Oh, that's cool.
One episode at a time, and which means she has to wait a week between watching episodes.
Oh, so you're going to do what West Wing Weekly tries to get people to do, but for people like us. Yeah, I can't just watch one episode in a week.
Oh, me either.
But for a new fan, yeah, I could see that, because you don't want to overwhelm them either.
Right, and I'm really hoping to avoid her knowing things like the fact that John Spencer dies before the series ends, and love to see her reactions. Yeah, or I'd love to see her reaction to, you know, what kind of day has it been, and get her predictions of what's going to happen before she's allowed to watch the next episode.
Yeah, find out. It'll be interesting to see her reactions to the Abby's revelation that Jed has multiple sclerosis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then her reaction to Mrs. Landingham's death.
Yes.
Or when Will joins the White House staff.
Or who she thinks is gonna win, Vinnick or Santos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or she'll never be able to predict the Pod People episode, so the only sci-fi episodes of The West Wing. Well, you'll have to keep us updated on when that podcast
definitely.
Gets
yeah,
off the
definitely.
Ground, because I'm absolutely going to listen to that.
Yeah. And, you know, if you need guests, you know where to find them.
Yeah, I was going to say, apparently you got three of them right here. So,
we will gladly.
Excellent, so...
So is it just the show, or do you got other things going? Are you?
Yeah, that's pretty much it at the moment.
Okay. Frank, what about you?
So I actually don't have anything going, but I have toyed with the idea of a podcast.
Wait. I should go back. Natalie, also tell the audience how they can find you. If you're on Twitter or talk about your Facebook page or, you know, however else people can contact you or, you know, whatever.
Sorry, Frank. I'm on Facebook. I can be found in pretty much any West Wing group that exists on Facebook. Other than that, there's 24 hours in a day, and I try and fill about 40 of them, so I limit myself to one social media platform at a time.
Nice. I can't do Twitter either. Our show, General Geekery, it's got a Twitter page, but neither me nor my co-host run it. Because when we started, he's like, you got to get a Twitter page. Fuck that. No. He's like, all right. I was like, fine, you run it. And then he's like, okay, dude, I don't have time for that. A week later, he's like, all right, I started the Twitter page. I'm like, ha, nice. And then Frank, I'm sorry. Show, we have no organization. It's all stream of consciousness, and the shit gets overlooked sometimes.
It's okay. Sometimes that's the best way to have a discussion. So I really don't have anything that I've been toying with the idea of a podcast. I just really, to be honest, I haven't had the time. So I thought this was a great idea to join in on this. And, you know, obviously, Natalie, you need recurring guests. I'm sure the three of us will gladly volunteer.
I volunteer as tribute.
I will keep that in my
I was a part of the original, the Wit and Wisdom in the West Wing, the Facebook page that sadly is no more. And I tried really hard to get her to keep it going, because I really thought more than just the fact that it was all of us quoting stuff all day long, and you could go in at any point in the day and see somebody had, you know, posted either a meme or a quote from an episode they liked, or there was a discussion going on. It had that sense of community, and I feel like a lot of those pages that have popped up since then, they try really hard, but they don't actually hit the same marks.
No, but I think the Wingnuts group has hit that same sweet spot.
Yeah, it's starting to.
Yeah,
that's where I found all of you. So funny. Yeah. The other night I posted, I want volunteers to join me on this show. Natalie replied, I want to say about 4 minutes later. And then Frank responded about 4 minutes after that. So I'm like, well, hey, there you go already. So even if nobody else steps up, I have two guests. There were like 8 or 9 other people. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, well, I guess we're going to have multiple episodes about the West Wing.
Nothing wrong with that.
Not at all.
So I would like to do more with that, I guess. Let's see if that happens. More discussions on the Facebook page. But yeah, like Natalie, I'm pretty much in just about every West Wing group. I don't comment on all of them, but I read everything. So yeah, I'm pretty easy to find as far as that goes.
And if listeners, if you want to join these groups, I don't even know if you can search for them because they're closed. But if you want to join the episode, feel free to contact one of us, and we'll send you a link, anyways. And then David, finally, I know you had a project you said you wanted to talk a little bit about.
A couple things. One of them requires a story, unfortunately, for you guys.
I don't give a shit. I'm not going anywhere.
When I was a kid, I'm a huge wrestling fan. Go ahead and try to figure out wrestling and the West Wing, except for there's a reference Leo makes to someone jumping around in a leotard.
The loudmouth in the leotard.
Yeah. when I was a kid, I was a huge wrestling fan. One of the guys that I used to watch wrestle on TV has become one of my best friends. And
life's funny that way.
It is. And he was a huge, he was a big name in, it was called World Championship Wrestling. And his name was Glacier. I just call him Ray. But, we happened to meet, years and years ago, and we became thick as thieves. And he and I have been working on a podcast for a while, and some things have gotten in the way, both on his end and mine. But it's going to be the two of us and another friend of ours. So we're working on that on top of a couple of other projects, that we're working on. And hopefully those will come to fruition soon. The other project that I'm working on is a podcast with my other two best friends. And we were just like one day sitting around saying, all right, screw it. We need to do something about this because we're ridiculous and funny and obnoxious. And so we just needed to do something. We have not quite started that yet, but we're right on the cusp. We're just trying to get some final things in place. And that's called Impure Imagination.
Nice.
So you can find that on Twitter, on Instagram. I think it's Impure Imagine on Twitter, and I think it's either the same or Impure Imagination on Instagram. It's probably just going to be us bullshitting like Tom and Dan for, you know, a couple hours here and there or an hour here and there. But we're going to try to actually make it a regular thing a couple times a week and hopefully get some listeners and who like ridiculousness.
Hey, I listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me every week, and that's nothing but 40 minutes of ridiculousness.
That's a fantastic podcast.
Yes, it is. You never know what the hell you're going to get in each episode.
I honestly, I'm not familiar with it. I think that's probably
it's, in my opinion, it's the reason why NPR exists. It's the reason it exists in the modern world. The original NPR used to exist for the sole purpose of the Star Wars radio dramas that they did in the 80s. But in this modern age, don't tell me is the
that's
only
right.
reason.
To correct myself, I have seen it. I have not listened to it, but I am familiar with it. As for the rest of it, I'm just hoping for the best for them. If we don't get any listeners, we're gonna have fun doing it, and you know, screw the rest.
Hey, you know
of
what?
It, but
this show doesn't have a big audience, but we've got a dedicated listening base, and even if some of them are accidental downloads, I don't give a shit.
Who cares?
We're here for the conversation. I mean, I have a feeling that this episode put it on the West Wing groups and probably get pretty good numbers. I want to thank the three of you for volunteering to do this show because. I put it out there on the Transformers group, and I got one or two people that said they would. And I thought, the West Wing, would tend to be a little vocal, but I was a little overwhelmed with the response. I mean, let's face it, I was planning to do the episode at some point. The timing worked out, and I was able to put it together 3 days later. Thank you all.
Not a problem.
Thanks for asking.
My pleasure.
As for the last thing I want to say, just to hijack you again, want to follow me, I'm on Twitter at I am the future. Yes. Don't.
Nice.
It's
nice.
Yeah. That is fantastic.
Yeah. It's, nice. It was a long time ago and I stole it from another wrestler.
It was a long time ago, which is now in the past.
Right. And I am the future. Yes.
You are
and
still the future.
It's spelled
awesome.
out. But, yeah, so But that's it. You can follow me there.
All right. And folks, that has been, but that's been the episode. So thanks for listening. And I will talk at all of you later. Good night, folks.